ಗೋಪಾಲ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಸದಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಜಯ ಉನ್ನತಿಲೀಲಾ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಟ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾಲ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಸದಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಅನಂದಕೊಡಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ಬೃಂದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಕಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀಯದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತ ಬೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪಗೋವಿನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಕುಂಡ ರಾಧಾಕುಂಡ ಗಿರಿಗೋವರ್ಧಾನಿಕಿ ಬೃಂದಾವನ್ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಾಯಪುರ್ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ್ಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿಕಿ ಯಮುನ ಮಾಯಿಕಿ ತುಳಸಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಸಾಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತ ಬೃಂದಕಿ ಓಂ ಪ್ರೇಮಾನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ಡ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ಡ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ಡ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುವಂಗ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ನಮಾಮಿ ಶುಭದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂದಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮದಿ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಜಾರಿಣಿ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ
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 ಓಂ ಅಜ್ಞಾತ ನಿರಾಂಧಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನ ಶಲಾಕಯ ಚಕ್ಷುರುನ್ಮೀಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ
ಶ್ರೀ
ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಹ್ಯಂ ದದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂಬಿಕಂ ವಂದೇಹಂ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಶ್ರೀಯುತ ಪದಕಮಲಂ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುಂ ವೈಷ್ಣವಂಶ್ಚ ಶ್ರೀ ರೂಪಂ ಸಾಗ್ರಜಾತಂ ಸಹಜನ ರಘುನಾಥಾನ್ವಿತಂ ಧಂಸ ಜೀವಂ ಸಾದ್ವೈತಂ ಸಾವಧೂತಂ ಪರಿಜನಾ ಸಹಿತಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ದೇವಂ ಶ್ರೀರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪದಾನ್ ಸಹಗನ ಲಲಿತಾಂ ಶ್ರೀ ವಿಶಾಖಾನ್ವಿತಂಶ್ಚ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂತಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮದೇ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವೇ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣೇ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣೀ ನಮಃ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮದಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ ಶ್ರೀ ವರ್ಷಾನವಿ ದೇವಿ ದೈದಾಯ ಕೃಪಾಬ್ಧಯೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಸಂಬಂಧ ವಿಜ್ಞಾನಂ ದಾಯಿನೇ ಪ್ರಭವೇ ನಮಃ ಮಾಧುರ್ಯೋಜ್ವಲ ಪ್ರೇಮಾದ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀರೂಪಾನುಗ ಭಕ್ತಿದ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರ ಕರುಣಾಶಕ್ತಿ ವಿಗ್ರಹಾಯ ನಮೋಸ್ತು ದೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಮೂರ್ತಯೇ ದೀನಧಾರಿಣೇ ರೂಪಾನುಗ ವಿರುದ್ಧಾವ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತಧ್ವಾಂದಹಾರಿಣೇ ನಮೋ ಗೌರ ಕಿಶೋರಾಯ ಸಾಕ್ಷಾತ್ ವೈರಾಗ್ಯ ಮೂರ್ತಯೇ ವಿಪ್ರಲಂಬರ ಸಾಂಭೋದೇ ಪದಾಂಬುಜಾಯ ದೇ ನಮಃ ನಮೋ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವಿನೋದಾಯ ಸಚ್ಚಿದಾನಂದ ನಾಮಿನೇ ಗೌರಶಕ್ತಿ ಸ್ವರೂಪಾಯ ರೂಪನು ಗೌರಾಯ ದೇ ಗೌರಾವಿರ್ಭವ ಭೂಮೇ ಸ್ವಂ ನಿರ್ದೇಷ್ಟ ಸ ಜನಪ್ರಿಯ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ಸರ್ವಭೌಮ ಶ್ರೀ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥಾಯ ದೇ ನಮಃ ವಾಂಚಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧೂಭ್ಯೇವ ಚ ಪರಿದಾನಂ ಭಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ನಮೋ ಮಹಾವದನ್ಯಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಪ್ರದಾಯಿನೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ನಾಮ್ನೇ ಗೌರತ್ವಿಷೇ ನಮಃ ಪಂಚತತ್ವಾತ್ಮಕಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಂ ಭಕ್ತರೂಪ ಸ್ವರೂಪಕಂ ಭಕ್ತಾವತಾರಂ ಭಕ್ತಾಖ್ಯಂ ನಮಾಮಿ ಭಕ್ತಶಕ್ತಿಯಂ ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಿಂಧೋ ದೀನಬಂಧೋ ಜಗಲ್ಪದೆ ಗೋವೇಶ ಗೋವಿಗಾ ಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾ ಕಾಂತ ನಮೋಸ್ತು ದೇ ಸುರನೌಂಗುರ್ಮಂದಮದೇರ್ಗದಿಸುಪದಾಂಬೋಜೌ ರಾಧಾ ಮದನ ಮೋಹನೌ ದಿವ್ಯ ವೃಂದಾರಣ್ಯಕಲ್ಪದ್ರುಮಾದ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ರತ್ನಾಕರ ಸಿಂಹಾಸನಸ್ಥೌ ಶ್ರೀಶ್ರಾಧಾ ಶೀಲ ಗೋವಿಂದ ದೇವೌ ಪ್ರಶಾಲಿಭಿ ಸೇವ್ಯಮಾನೌ ಸ್ಮರಾಮಿ ಶ್ರೀಮನ್ರಾಸರ ಸಾರಂಭಿ ವಂಶೀವಟತಟ ಸ್ಥಿತ ಕರ್ಷನ್ ವೇಣು ಸುನೇರ್ ಗೋವೇರ್ ಗೋವಿನಾಥ ಶ್ರೀಯೇ ಸುನಾ തപ്തകാഞ്ചന ഗൗരാംഗീ രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസുദേവി പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ. ജയ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭോ നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദ. ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ. ഓം പാഠായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണീം ഭഗവതീം അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീം അംബ ത്വാമനുസന്ധനാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണീം. നമോസ്തു തേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ പുല്ലാരവിന്ദായതപത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപ പ്രപന്നപാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകബാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമഃ. സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സ സുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാടൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും. ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതട ജയദ്രഥ ജല ഗാന്ധാരനീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനീ കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാവികർണ ഘോരമകര ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സുതീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണ നദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥജന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനസൽപദൈരഹരഃ പ്രീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാത് ഭാരത പങ്കജ കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ. മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാകമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്ര രുദ്രമരുതസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർവേദൈർ സാംഗവദേർക്രമോപനിഷദൈർഗായന്തിയം സമഗാഃ ജ്ഞാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തിയം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ. So today we will start the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. At the end of 16th chapter, Krishna mentioned in the last two verses the importance of Shastram, isn't it? That's how the chapter finished. Krishna said there that the Shastra Vidimul Srajya, the last two verses, Shastra Vidimul Srajya Vartade Kamakarakat Nasa Siddhim Avapnoti Nasukham Naparam Gadim. Then again he said, Tasmal Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vivastito Jnatva Shastra Vidhanoktam Karma Kartumi Harhasi. Those two verses is the introduction to the next chapter. Krishna is saying that it is from these two verses the next chapter has come. Practically, Krishna has confirmed that without Shastram, there is no discussion about spiritual life. If you keep Shastram away, then it's finished. There is nothing left then. There may be anybody in this world, doesn't matter. If there is no Shastram behind it, there is no discussion about spiritual life. So whatever Krishna has, we will discuss, because the next chapter also require a long introduction to understand why all this is spoken in a particular way. So when Krishna said these two verses to Arjuna, Arjuna started the next chapter straight away with a question. Tasmal shastram pramanam te idi bhagaval vakyad labdha prashna bijaha Arjuna vacha. Arjuna heard that this tasmal shastram pramanam te, when Krishna kept repeating him the importance of shastram, he says idi bhagaval vakyad, hearing Krishna's words, labdha prashna bijaha Arjuna vacha. Arjuna felt that there is a problem there, because how far people understand shastram, how far people accept shastram in their life. This question is worrying Arjuna's mind. Millions of people in this world, how many people are interested in the shastram? They have their own frame of mind, they work based on that. And they think that they are following shastram, but they don't. So that is why Arjuna asked that question. Now, coming to this, before going to that, we're talking about this. We talk about Sanatana Dharmam, isn't it? Sanatana Dharmam, this is how the original word used for Vaidika Dharmam. And this Vaidika Dharmam, today presently known as Hindu religion or Hindu Dharmam, and this word doesn't exist in the Shastram. Which one? This word Hindu doesn't exist in the Shastram. And this has come, this name has come, Hindu Dharma has come because of the people from Iran, Persians. They called by the name Hindu. How it happened was, and after a while we have accepted that as our religion in that way. So just like you can see in some villages, the villagers will give some name to somebody. In a like a pet name like thing. After a while he will accept that. After some time he himself will accept that, because everybody knows him only by that name. So they accept it like that, isn't it? And similarly, this you can see in villages. So he accepted that and it has become his name. Similarly, this word Hindu has come in the same way due to their pronunciation problem. The Persians had a problem with pronunciation. They couldn't say the word because the people who lived on this side of the Indus River, on the eastern side of the Indus River, Sindhu River, those who came from other outside, the Persians, they came for business to Bharatavarsham. And in the Persian language, sa becomes ha. There is no sa, they call it ha. So therefore, it became Hindu. Sindhu, those who lived on this side of the river Sindhu, they were called as Hindus. That's how the word Hindu came. It doesn't exist anywhere in the Vedic literature. The word is never mentioned, the word Hindu. This you can see in other languages also. The same thing happens. In Tamil, for example, ha, they use ka, the word there. Aham, they will sometimes say akam, in that way. In Bengali also they have. They use the word ba instead of wa. Vrajam, they call it as brajam. And Vrindavanam, they call it as Vrindavanam. So like this, this in so many languages, in many, many languages, you will see these letters being altered to their pronunciation. So similarly, Sindhu became Hindu. So earlier they used to call it as Saindhava, and then they became Haindava. So what is important here is not that what is that Hindu. It is not one religion or a particular tradition. So many different groups of people with different divisions and denominations exist in this Sanatana Dharma. So all that different groups which follow different traditions, all of them combined together is known as Hindu religion today. So many different religious groups. If you travel from Kashmir to Kanyakumari, you will find in every state many different traditions and different groups, and they are all combined together and called Hindu Matham, Hindu religion, and that is what is also called Sanatana Dharma. So generally, everyone who accepts Vedam as the authority, Vedam is the authority, they are all belong to the Sanatana Dharma. Their only thing what is in common to all these different religious groups is the authority of the Vedam. Is the authority of the Vedam. So in Bharatavarsham, only if you accept Vedam as the authority, only in that case you will be included in this. You will be included in the Sanatana Dharma. Buddha Madam or Buddhist religion, the main reason why it was thrown out of Bharatavarsham is they did not accept the authority of the Vedam. That was the reason. It is amazing. Buddhism is liked by many people all over the world, isn't it? Many, many people who like Buddhism. It spread all the way to Far East, up to Japan, to China, and to many other, even in the modern world, even in the Western world, many people like Buddhism. But Buddhism has no roots in India today. Why? The reason being, Buddha is the first person who said, I have realized this, he said. I have realized this. And in a way, he said that I am the one who has invented, or it's my realization, he said, instructions to the world. In that way it came from Buddha. And many people in this world, in the modern world, like Buddhism. They like Buddhism. Practically, Buddha's religion, or Buddhism as it is called, and Vedantam, Yogam, there is not a lot of difference. It's one and the same thing. Whatever Buddha has spoken is very much in line with the Vedantam. No, it's not much of a difference. And there's nothing wrong with Buddhism in every aspect of it. But the main problem with Buddhism is this, that a personality has come and stood in it. That's where problem started. A personality had come and stood in the front. In the Sanatana Dharma, what is the beauty? No personality there. No personality there. Buddha is saying here, all that what Buddha has spoken to this world is spoken a lot more with clarity in the Upanishads. Whatever Buddha has spoken, it's spoken in the Upanishads with a lot more clarity. But there is no personality in the Upanishads anywhere. You can see that when you study Upanishads, you will see this, that personality is not there. Like Buddha presented himself as a personality there. So, even in the Upanishads, all the rishis, what they have said was, we are only the drashtava. That's the word they use, drashtava. That they're saying, we can't say we know it, we can't say we don't know it. That's the way they have spoken. Because this thing, what has come through the rishis, that existed even before their time. Eternally it existed. Sanatanam. That's the word. That's why this word Sanatanam is important. Sanatanam, externally, that knowledge existed. This knowledge existed. And therefore it's called Sanatana Matam or Sanatana religion. So, and we have seen that. That is how they put it. We have seen that, what that Sanatana, that's all. In other words, in a very simple way, they gave us this Brahmavidya, or Alpavidya, or knowledge of the self. They put it in a very simple way to us. They are saying to us that we have found out this, and we want also like to have, you have to, like you also to have it. But this has been existing even before our time. Which one? Brahmavidya. Brahmavidya existed before them. So, Buddha, because he was a prince, royal family member, and was enjoying all facilities, isn't it? Prince's life. And what he saw was, it's interesting, he was seeing the miseries of the world. People dying, people getting sick, people getting old. All these things has touched his heart very much, Buddha's heart. And he decided that I want to free myself from this, what's happening to all of us. And it became a very powerful emotion in him. And that emotion became a very big excitement for himself. So because of that, he wanted to, because of his compassion or grace or kripa or whatever that is, Buddha wanted to share that experience what he had with everyone. And he wanted to uplift everybody in this world. Bahujana hidaya, bahujana sukhaya. That emotion for others' benefit, excitement and karunyam. Karunyam means compassion for others. And when you read all that, it's all very, very beautiful. Isn't it? When you read that Buddha's compassion for others, Buddha's feeling for others, how he, although born in a royal family with all princely facilities, still feeling compassion to the poor people suffering in this world, to everyone, all living entities going through the process of old age, disease, death and things like that. But although all of them that looks beautiful, still the rishi's realizations is the truth. It is a little bit difficult to digest for most of the people. People get carried away by the emotions and excitement. Even though Buddha has been so influential with his compassion as a personality, he was so compassionate and he was so kind to others and such a nice person and who had such deep realizations, what is in the Upanishads, still Rishi's words are the truth. Rishi's realizations is the authority still, in spite of all the good qualities Buddha had. This you will understand when you go a little further in the spiritual life. Why it is so important to hold on to the Rishi's words. So they are talking to us, who the Rishis, when we are talking about Rishis, Durvasav, Vishwamitra, Vasishta, and the endless list, Angiras, Srinarada Maharshi, they are all part of that tradition. They are talking to us about this truth in a very, very simple way, about this Brahmavidya. Isn't it? There is no emotion behind it. There is no excitement or emotion behind it. So, they are saying to us, the sun you can see, similarly we are seeing the truth. That's how they put it to us. So, this truth is very simple, they are saying. And also, in your own daily life, you can realize this truth, what they have spoken to us. And that is the same pattern Krishna has followed in the Bhagavad Gita. If you remember in the 9th chapter, Krishna said that Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, Pavitram, Idam Uttamam, Pratyaksham, Avagamam Dharmyam, Susukham Kartum Avyayam. He begins that chapter with that verse. This is what that is. That in spite of all, it's okay, you can bring a personality and mention all these things about Buddha's compassion, Buddha's kindness, Buddha's grace and all other things. Such a great, nice personality. But not only that, even in the Puranam, Buddha has been described as an incarnation of Vishnu. Is it not? In Bhagavadam, he is mentioned as an incarnation of Vishnu. In spite of all that, we cannot accept Buddha. For this reason, because he didn't accept the authority of the Veda. That is the strength of the Veda's authority. And that is what Krishna is saying here. Tasmal Shastram Pramanande. There's nothing else is authority in this world. You can't be an authority, I can't be an authority. Vedam is the authority. Therefore he says, Tasmal Shastra Shastra Vidimul Srajya Vartade Kamakarada Nasa Siddhim Avapnodi Nayadi Paramam Gadim. He mentioned. And then he said, Tasmal Shastram Pramanande Karyakari Vivastido Nyatva Shastra Vidhanoktam Karma Kartam Harhasi. Only by knowing Shastram you can engage in karma. Krishna is saying like that, isn't it? So so Krishna mentions there that in the Sanadana Dharmam existence is based on the Vedam. Vedam is the Pramanam. People will come and go. Many, many great personalities have come through this tradition. And they have come and gone, come and gone. But Shastram remains, isn't it? So what is Vedam means? That is the interesting question. What does Vedam means, isn't it? Vedam, in Mahabharatam, this question will come. Generally, we refer to Vedam as Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvanavedam, like that. Dhritarashtra had a conversation with Sanal Sujada Maharshi. It's called Sanal Sujadiyam. There he says, Na Vedam, Vedam ityaho. Sanal Sujada Maharshi says, you are saying Vedam, Vedam, you are thinking it's a set of books or something, isn't it? That's the way people will think. There's four different volumes. Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvanavedam. But that is not Vedam. Vedum Vedo na vidyate, he says there. Suppose you have studied a lot of Vedic hymns and you may not find Vedam in that hymns. You may not find, because Paralpa Vedyade Yenasa Vedo Uchade. In other words, that gives the realization of the truth. By which you get to know Paramatma, Brahmam or Bhagavan. Like in the Bhagavadam, it says like that, isn't it? Vadandida Tattvavidam Tattvam Yajnanam Advayam Brahmedi Paramatmedi Bhagavanidi Shabdyade. So, by realizing any of those three, Paramatma or Bhagavan or Brahmam, whichever way you realize that, then, and realizing that that is the ultimate goal of life, and if you become perfect in that process, and if your darkness or ignorance from inside is taken out, and knowledge is revealed, and your ajnanam goes away from inside, that is known as Vedam. So Vedam, that is how to understand Vedam. Not look at it in the form of a set of books or hymns, but instead by which we realize and experience it in the life, either in Brahmam, Paramatma or Bhagavan. But Vedam is mostly Shabdam, isn't it? Shabda Brahmam it is. Karmagandam, everything is Shabdam, hymns they are. But there is no rejection of the Shabdam, the sound waves. But there is no Shabda Rashi, or the Shabda Brahmam is accepted. But because of that, we don't ignore that completely. We don't ignore it completely. So, because we have spoken about Buddha in this way, does not mean that Buddhism is completely rejected. Because if it was like that, we wouldn't have spoken about Buddha. Buddha is very much respected because he has spoken what is in the Upanishads. Therefore, and he was the greatest yogi as well. So that's why he was addressed as Yoginam Chakravarti, emperor among the yogis. And that's how it's spoken about Buddha. There's nothing wrong with that, but in the Bhagavadam, he has mentioned as an incarnation of Vishnu, isn't it? In the 24 incarnations, if you look in the 4th or 5th chapter, you'll see there, Buddha is addressed as incarnation of Vishnu. So often people ask, why you don't worship Buddha? And they do not understand why we don't worship Buddha. Many people have this, because a lot of people have a very soft feeling for Buddhism. And they like it, and they come to the temple, and we say Buddha is incarnation, but there is not one form of Buddha anywhere in the temples. So they ask this question, why we don't worship Buddha? The reason is this, because Buddha has not accepted the authority of the Veda. There, the path was changed, the tradition has changed. So, so what is the essence of this Vedam? Even though we may say it in four Vedam, Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam and Atharvanavedam, what we are looking for is perfection in life, is it not? We want to make our life perfect, purnatvam, complete in all aspects, and that bliss, what Shastram is talking about, to experience that. And that is the ultimate goal, which means that we want that perfection and we want also freedom from distress. In life, distress is following us all the time, all the, through life, is it not? So, because because it is freedom from distress is the main goal for everything. That is why we keep on inquiring in this world and doing various things, thinking that one day it is all going to become better or happy, in other words. So we are looking, what should I do to get free from this distress? And that freedom from distress, that is what we want to achieve through religion or what we call as adhyatmam, spiritual life, whatever it is. Nowadays we say matam, isn't it? Religion, it is addressed as like that. So when we say adhyatmam and religion, or spiritual and religion, two different things. When we say spiritual, it's only meant for very few people. Spiritual life is meant for few people. One great personality said this. He said that spirituality is only for the few. It is always for the few, spirituality. The rest, the religion, is like the will have. It's like some drill. Drill time religion. Just like in the school classes, you have when you have to study a lot sitting, then one hour, half an hour, you are sent to a drill, sports activity, something like that. So it's like a drill time religion. There are other things. That means in the drill period, you go and do some exercise, bodily exercise, stretching arms, stretching legs. In a similar way, this religion is like that. For those who are not serious about the spiritual life. So, always, the highest knowledge is always for very few people. For very few people. And if they get it, that is enough. Everybody won't get it. But very few people realize the truth, that is sufficient. That is sufficient. If they realize the truth, if there are people like that in this world, the other people will get the benefit from that. And if you ask the question, is it good enough if they alone get it? Everybody else should get it. If you ask that question, others will also get it, because that is the way it works. Spiritual life works like that. If a few people get it, from them others will get it. But the few people have to get it. And you cannot make it a mass affair. This has come mostly from the Western traditions. This making it a massive affair, incorporating everyone into it. Because this principle is that we have to increase the number. We have to increase the number. And we do everything we can to get the number up. Number up. The result is nobody gets it. When you do that, result is nobody gets it. You can see great Mahatmas, they lived on their own in one small room somewhere in a village. And due to this, their strength of spiritual realizations, to their own realizations, and it was like a lamp burning all the time, and others who have come closer to him, he has made them all in the same way. He's made them all in the same way. If you look back into the history with great personalities, you will see this happening. So many other householders, grihasthas, they achieved the state of spiritual life in a very advanced state. And they were benefited by the presence of one person who was fully realized. And due to his association, others who had come in closely contact with him, due to his association, they became all very elevated in spiritual life. And this is only what is possible in spiritual life also. That what that person has realized, he can distribute, serve it to few others who is around him. And therefore, spiritual life is always individual based. It's always individual based, not society based. You cannot make it society based. If you make it society based, there will be some benefit to everybody, but nobody will realize the truth. A lot of people will get some benefit from that. They may give up some bad habits, they may follow some spiritual path in religious life, things like that. But they won't realize the truth. Why? Because you have made it, the process has changed. You have thinking that by getting it to all over the world, the whole world will become spiritual. It won't. It won't become. The principle is, if one person, you will see this, even Prabhupada mentions this in the Bhagavad Gita. If you look into the introduction, you will see there, if one person becomes Krishna conscious, he says, then all my effort is worthwhile. You will see this in the introduction. And every time people ask this question, what does it mean? So many people have become Krishna conscious, they say, but nobody has become Krishna conscious yet. That Krishna consciousness, what Prabhupada is saying, if one person becomes, that is that same principle. That one person realize it, then a lot of people will get the benefit from that. That one person has to be there, isn't it? So, why it is, spiritual life is always individual based, not society based. You can't make a society with the full of spiritual personalities. So it is called Vyakti Nishtam, individual based, not Samuha Nishtam, not society based. So that is why many times when you go into spiritually advanced, realized souls, if they are living anywhere, if you go to them, and if when you go, are closely contact with them, they will tell you this, that even if you go around, if you have telling other problems to them, they will tell you, mind your own business. You have not come here to get the organization going better. You have not come here to sort out all the problems here. You have come here for self-realization. Mind your business. That will be their answer to that. Because they themselves, around whom an organization has been built, they themselves don't believe in that organization. Because they know the problems there. Once you start, because that is purely vyavaharam it is. Organization is completely vyavaharam. Who should be the controller, who should be the manager, who should be the president. All this mutual arguments will begin. Who should control the funds, who should control. This way it will go in a different direction. So, if you go to an organization and if you get absorbed in all these things, then the purpose for which you have come to spiritual life is gone, isn't it? That is the important principle. So, the people will say that have you come to change the setup in the ashram? It's not going to change because they know that very well. So, let the lamp burn within our own heart first. Let us become first perfect ourselves, and that is Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma principle is always like that. Sanatana Dharma is individual based. It's not organization based. It's not society based. It is individual based. Before I get myself clear of all my own doubts, I cannot clear others' doubts. Is it not? I should be clear within myself. What I am talking about is clear to me. Only then I can clear somebody else's doubts. Is it not? So that is why they insist this principle. Similarly, if I am not free from my own distress, how can I remove somebody else's distress? That's not possible. So I have to be free from distress if I have to remove somebody else's distress, isn't it? So unless Shanti comes to me, unless freedom from distress happens to me, and without that happening, all these printing books, or my lectures, or by organizing committees and meetings, nothing is going to work. Nothing is going to work. We have this false understanding, it has come from the other places in the world, that we become organization, community-based everything, isn't it? Community-based, we want to run the spiritual life. And that's why we are thinking that if we set up a structured way, because that's how we are educated. This is our problem, not the spiritual life problem. And we are thinking, if we put properly everything in order, in a structured way, it will work. It won't. That is the first principle. Because Shanti, Krishna is saying, Shanti, if it is there in my own heart, it will be like this. Just like a flower, which has got the nice smell comes from the flower, and it will spread everywhere, and people will come. Similarly, if you have that Shanti inside, others will feel, experience that Shanti, and that will spread everywhere. Similarly, Krishna is saying here that this knowledge of the self is like that. And in a natural way, a realized soul, he will affect others. In a very natural way, it will happen. So, this thing, the rishis have found out through their own experience. The rishis have found out this through their own experience. And they told us that this is the underlying principle of Sanatana Dharma. Of Sanatana Dharma, which means knowing the self within, knowledge of the self within. That is the basic principle. Because we ourselves do not know that we exist, isn't it? We don't have that awareness even within us. That awareness is not there, anubhavam, bodham. And till we know what we are and who we are, and till we know that, all other things is completely material it is. On a material platform it is happening. So, till I know my own identity, who I am, what is my real identity, only then I am perfect. Till then I am not perfect. Whatever I am speaking is just words, that's all. Till I realize who I am not perfect, isn't it? And this is Upanishad statement. I mentioned there that the Ramalinga Swamiji, he saw moon and he sang this song that addressing the moon, he says there, when he saw moon, he's saying, I'm seeing moon in Lord Shiva's head, isn't it? He Soman, is on Somanadhi is addressed because of that, presence of the moon on his head, isn't it? Similarly, let me realize the self within me, says Swamiji, says like that. So, and he says that, give me instructions to know who I am first, before me going and attacking somebody else outside. So, this is the difference in Sanatana Dharma with all other religions in this world. So, one who has known Vedam, and even if you have not known all the Vaidika mantra, all the mantras in the Vedam, it is understood that if he has realized the self, he has understood the Vedam. He knows the Vedam and he knows all the Upanishads. Because if you hear a person who has realized the self, by hearing the sound from his whatever he has spoken, that will bring the peace and to the mind, and it will also make you experience that. That is the beauty of the realized persons. So, in Valmiki Ramayanam, Hanuman comes to see Ramachandra, is it not? Hanuman, they are meeting together in the river bank, Pamba River. So, there Ramachandra says that one who has Shanti inside, in his words, there will be naturally a healing power. It will be a healing power in him. And if somebody has tried to kill him by lifting the hand with the sword, even he will drop the sword when he hears his words. And therefore, he says here, suppose somebody is very proficient in music, but purpose of music is not art or musical to impress others. Instead, the purpose of music is to heal, to Shanti inside. So, these two things that Ramachandra says here, that one whose words does not create any anxiety in somebody else's mind. Krishna mentions that, if you remember, I think in the 13th chapter, Anudvegakaram Vakyam, he says. That whose words does not create anxiety in someone. Anudvegakaram Vakyam, Krishna says like that. And he knows grammar, who that person, says Ramachandra. Ramachandra says this in the Pamba River bank, he says here, when he sees Hanuman. Hanuman came to see him. Ramachandra was in extreme distress at that time. Sita Devi has been kidnapped and gone away. And where will I see Sita Devi? Ramachandra is asking everybody. Like Krishna was asking the plants and the creepers. And the gopis were asking the plants and the creepers and the trees about Krishna. In the same way, Ramachandra was asking about Sita Devi. Where will I find her? And inquiring about a human person, a woman, to asking from about them to the plants and the creepers and the trees by Ramachandra, and Valmiki mentions this there. So much anxiety in Ramachandra's mind about this, and what is Valmiki says there. Valmiki gives the example that in the olden days, when Ayurvedic physicians, when you go to them with some illness, they know what the remedy is. What they will do? They'll go to the compound in their garden and they'll pull out a plant. And they'll be looking for that plant to cure this person. That is how the treatment was. Medicines were not manufactured and kept ready. Bottle nicely and like the way it's done in the... Here, we are already recognizing everybody is sick. That's why we are so sure that it will sell. But in the past, in the long time before, when Ayurveda was prominent, they didn't do that. They knew you go to them and they will go and get the plant from the garden and they will give it to you. So Valmiki says, just like when the physician goes and looks for the plant, similarly Ramachandra was looking for Sita Devi. In a joking way, he says. That, and then Jadayu was the bird who was lying there ready to die, isn't it? So Jadayu could not get up because both his wings were cut off by Ramachandra. So when Ramachandra and Lakshmana arrived there, he wanted to pass on this information to Ramachandra before he left his body. So he had, and saying that Ravana has kidnapped Sita, Jadayu was going to leave the body. So he says here that the Jadayu at that point in the Ramayanam mentions there that Yam Oshadhina Iva Ayushman Anveshasi Mahavane Sa Devi Mamacha Prana Ravanena Ubhayam Hatam. This is in the Valmiki Ramayanam, this verse. He says, Yam Oshadhim Iva Ayushman Anveshasi Mahavane Sa Devi Mamacha Prana Ravanena Ubhayam Hatam. In just like the way you are searching for this remedy in the like a herb in the forest, similarly Ravana has taken Sita Devi from here, and including my life as well, saying this, Jadayu collapsed. That's all Jadayu said to Ramachandra. Then Ravana has come and he has taken her from here like a plant they take from the ground. Similarly, he has taken her and taken my life also and left like that. Yes. So, it is one of the most touching scenes in Ramayana. If you read that part of Valmiki's Ramayana, then so, and people meditate on that aspect of Ramachandra's discussions with Jadayu and Hanuman. So Jadayu, Ramachandra embraces Jadayu at that time. Seeing this, embraces Jadayu, and he says to Lakshmana that not only in the human species you find Mahatmas, Mahatmas in even other species also. Jadayu was a bird, isn't it? So Lakshmana, he says to him that this personality is highly worshipable. Who? Jadayu. Jadayu. And he says there that Sarvatra Ghalu Drishyande Sadhavo Dharmacharina Shura Sharanya Saumitre Tiryak Yoni Mateshu Abhi. He says like this, that this Sarvatra Ghalu Drishyande Sadhavo Dharmacharina. He says, you can see those who follow the path of dharmam in every other species also, in the bird species even, who follow the dharmam. He says, O Saumitri, addressing Lakshmana, even though their birds are lower, they are born in the lower birds, but still they follow dharmam. He is mentioning like this to him. And that means that Ramachandra is saying there that those who follow the Vaidika Dharma, that means they have studied Vedam, and not only that, they performed Agnihotram. Agnihotram is the what they have to do every day from the burning fire at home, and all the Upasana Karma, what Brahmana have to do, they are doing all that, and they retain that fire going at home for generation after generation. And if he has done all that, and such a person when he dies, a lot of mantram is required to be chanted at the time of his death. And Ramachandra chanted all the mantras for Jadayu. When Jadayu left the body, a Vaidika Brahmana who followed rigidly the Vedam and who retained Agnihotram. Agnihotram, I mean service to Agni, the fire. And all the upasana, what he has to perform, he has done all that. And he lived all through his life like that. And he left his body. That means he is honored very much for while leaving the body. And the Brahmana samskaram involves chanting lot of Vedic mantras for his departure. And after that, samskaram is performed, the kriya. The setting fire to the body. Everything is done after that. So Ramachandra arranged all these things for Jadayu. Jadayu is not a Brahmana or anything. But as far as Ramachandra is concerned, then Ramachandra says to Lakshmana, he comes in the Vedic tradition. So therefore, what I'm saying is, why is Vedam, Adhyayanam means, studying Vedam means, Vedam is a samskaram in a person. It's a samskar in a person. Austerity, tapas, knowledge, jnanam, and realizations, swanubhuti, you know, what's all realization, and tyagam, sacrificing it for others. These are all aspects of the Vaidika Dharma. Samskaram, it's a samskar in a person. It's nothing else. It's a samskaram in a person. Austerity in life, simple living. Tapasya. And then jnanam, knowledge of the self, knowledge of the shastram. Swanubhuti, translating that into one's own life in self-realization. And then tyagam, always willing to sacrifice it for others. This is all the symptoms of the Vedam. So this chapter 17, before we enter into this, we have to know certain other things. Then the chapter will make more sense to us. And it's for that reason why we are talking about all these things. So it is the name of that samskaram in a person, or the austerity in that person's nature, control of the senses, meditation. If you look at all these things, has Buddha got the Vedam or not? Buddha has got the Vedam. Buddha has got the Vedam. And you cannot say he doesn't have it. He has got it. but at the same time, in the Buddhism, Vedam is there. Vedam is present in the Buddhism. So, in the first initial lectures, what Buddha has given at that time, he will talk about who is a Brahmana. Buddha will say this. And he will also say the symptoms of a Brahmana. Buddha Bhagavan has spoken about that. But later on, all that was ignored, thrown away, because they wanted to build this cult around, centered around Buddha. And it came out in a different form. And they kept changing everything, and therefore finally it was taken out of Sanatana Dharma. It was taken out of a Sanatana Dharma. So when they were performing this sacrifice for Jadayu of burning his body, and Ramachandra says there that in the Aranyakandam you will see this. He mentions a few verses. Says there that Yagadi Yajna Shilanam Ahidam Agnecha Yagadi Apara Avanitana Avadirnamya Chayayacha Bhumim Pradayinam Mayatvam Samanutnyade Gacha Lokan Anuttaman Gridhara Raja Mahasattva Samskrutacha Mayavraja. This is Ramchandra's words. Ramchandra is saying to him, addressing him, Jadayu, or great king among the eagles, he was an eagle, isn't he? I created you ritually, and by me aptly consented to you, I have given you the, I will request you now, you go to the spiritual world. You go to the spiritual world, says Ramchandra to Jadayu. Tells him, you go to the spiritual world. You go to those worlds that are destined for the those who have come through the Vedic traditions, and to those who are destined to practice of all the ritualism, and to those that are destined for the donor of the lands. Ramachandra says, one who has performed such charities, one who has performed, followed that path of Vedic traditions very sincerely, and saying this, Rama, Gridhara Raja Mahasattvam Samskridasa Samskridacha Maya Vraja, he says, that Rama said this to the departed Jadayu. To Jadayu he has said this to him. So, and the way Ramachandra said that, I order you to Jadayu, he says. I order you, you go to the spiritual world. And it was after that, this is that scene in Pamba River. What happened was that the Jadayu left. And Sugriva sent Hanuman to Ramachandra to see him, isn't it? So Hanuman comes in the form of a brahmachari, Brahmana brahmachari. He comes there and he comes to friend of Rama and Lakshmana. Rama and Lakshmana are sitting there. Now you have to forget Ramachandra as the personality of Godhead and all that. Just remember that he is a prince who has come from Ayodhya with his brother Lakshmana there. And very highly cultured, samskaram-wise, gone through all the proper education under Vasishta. So proper training is there in Ramachandra, isn't it? But here, Ramachandra's wife has been kidnapped. Sita Devi has been kidnapped. And he is acting like a pragradam. Pragradam means one who has no knowledge. Pragradam. People, if they do things in a pragradam way, we say that he is very crude, not cultured, not refined, in other words. Whereas samskaram makes a person more peaceful about the situations, isn't it? So, when Ramachandra started crying like that, because of the Sita Devi's departure, and they mentions there that more worse than a pragrada person, Ramachandra is crying now. So, one of the most important topics in Ramayanam to take notice of is these situations. Mahatmas, they will be in different ways in this world. This is important. Mahatmas, when you look at them, they will be different types in this world. Some people, they'll be perfect inside and they'll be perfect outside. Inside as well as outside, they'll be perfect. Like who? Sukadev Goswami. One example. He is always perfect inside and he is always perfect outside. You must see that in the Bhagavatam, that perfection of Sukadev Goswami. If somebody acts in a bad way or not according to the standard of a spiritually advanced person, even if it's Ramachandra, he will fire him. That is Sukadev Goswami. You will see that in the Bhagavatam. There is a verse where he says that it doesn't matter whether it's Ramachandra or anybody, if he is attached to women, this is his destiny. He says openly there. It will be, that is the destiny, he says. He's not firing Ramachandra to tell us, Martyavadarasya Martyashikshanam. Not to fire Ramachandra, that's not the intention behind it. Is because Bhagavatam is meant for us, to instruct us, he's saying to us. So, he is like that. He is perfect inside, he is perfect outside. We won't have any doubt about such people. You won't have any doubt about it. Some people, they will be perfect inside, but outside they will be in trouble all the time. All kinds of problems they will create. Inside it is perfect, outside it is not perfect. Ramavadaram is like that. Rama's appearance is like that. Some people, outside will be perfect, inside will be full of trouble. Full of trouble. So, and some people, inside and outside will be trouble. So you can see how Mahatmas, people are categorized into all these different things. Some people, inside and outside is perfect. Some people, inside is perfect, outside is not perfect. Ramchandra is like that. And some people, outside will be perfect. They will know how to, they will know all the manners, etiquettes, everything. But inside is all trouble. And some others, inside is trouble, outside is also trouble. So, in this Ramavadaram, Ramachandra's appearance, we will get a lot of doubts with about different personalities there. Because here you can see, Ramachandra is crying. And everybody asked a question, he is God and he is crying like this? How do you explain that to somebody, isn't it? And all he is crying because Sita Devi has gone. Everybody happens that in life, isn't it? One day wife will die and go, or husband will die and go. That means at the end of life. So that is what question we'll ask. People will read Ramayanam and will say, why is he crying like this? So much distress and things like that, questions will come up. So, ordinary people even don't cry like this to such an extent. So, that is why one of the Ramayanam commentator asked this question about Valmiki. I think Valmiki is a little bit over the board, he said, talking about Ramachandra. He said that only Valmiki can write things like this. He said that because he has not taken birth from a womb of a mother. If he is born from the womb of a mother, he won't make it like this. You know where Valmiki was born from? The Valmigam, isn't it? Valmigam means that anthill. From there he was born. So, because he is born from the anthill, that is why his mind is not right. One other commentator says about him. So, Valmiki janma munirevaka kathora chittaha. Kathora chittam, that cruel nature in him. That when he was in the, Ramachandra and Lakshmana was there and Hanuman arrived there, he came and he paid his obeisances to both of them. Now Ramachandra doesn't know who is elder, who is younger, who is elder brother, who is younger brother. And as soon as he paid his obeisances and heard Hanumanji's voice, there Ramachandra says to Lakshmana, look at his sound, how he speaks. And it's not from this world, he says, hearing Hanuman's voices. It has started from the nabi, from the abdomen, and it has come through the urasa and kantham, and it is coming out in that way. So, not simply is coming from the mouth alone, he says like that. Nabi hrutkanda rasana, Tyagaraja says in the Kirtanam about Hanumanji's voice. Nabi hrut kantham rasana, the four places, Parapashyanti Madhyama Vaikari, the four places through which the sound comes, that means the para sound that's coming out. So Hanuman saw Ramachandra and Lakshmana, and he speaks in a very different way, in the sense that he does not know who is the elder brother, younger brother, and he addressing both of them because he doesn't know who is who. And he mentions there Rajarshi Deva Pratimau Tapasau Samshidam Vradau Desham Katham Imam Prapto Bhavandau Varavarninau Trasayandau Magaganan Anyamcha Vanacharina. Ramachandra says like this, that both of you look like kingly saints, he says. You look kshatriyas, but you look saintly as well. And your build and your appearance is like that. You are very good ascetics, performing serious austerities and ideal complexion. And he says, how come you arrived at this countryside and scaring the animals and other inhabitants of this forest? He mentions like that to them. So at that time, everything when Hanuman spoke to them, it was always addressing both, keeping both in the picture. Duvajanam, that means in a, not singular, in plural, Duvajanam. All address was like, because he still doesn't know who is the elder and younger. So if you address like that, if you address one person only, then it may hurt the other person. Why? I have been ignored because not knowing that. So without creating any udvegam, udvegam means anxiety in the other heart, he says to them, looking at you both, you look like as though Rajarshis, royal, saintly royal family members. And sometimes when you look at you, look like demigods, devatas. And why? How come you have come to this forest and with your, you are walking around in this Pamba river bank and through the forest with your feet, which can get hurt easily in this place? And what is the reason? Katham desham imam prapto. Ramachandra is saying to Lakshmana, look at his words, what he has used while addressing us. He has learned all the Vedams, it looks like that. Rig Vedam, Yajur Vedam, Sama Vedam, Atharvana Vedam, and the grammar he knows very well, he says. Ramachandra says to Lakshmana. And also it looks that he is very good in Sangeetam, in music as well. Hanuman has only spoken a few words. By then, Ramachandra made this comment about him to Lakshmana. And he says here, I can only say, he says, that he has studied all the Vedam, otherwise he couldn't have spoken in this way. He could not have spoken in this way. The way that he puts it to him is that na an Rigvedam vinidasya na a yajurvedam dharinaha na am samaveda vidusha shakyamevam vibhashitam. This is the words of Ramachandra. Ramachandra says, he is definitely the knower of Rigvedam, and he does have the influence of Yajurvedam in him, and he is definitely a scholar in Samavedam, and possibly or truly speak this way. Otherwise, it is not possible to be like this. Ramachandra sensed all this in the words of Hanuman. Noonam vyagaranam krishnam anena bahudashrutam bahu vyagaranena na kinjit aba shabditam. He says to him, definitely he knows the grammar well. Severely and comprehensively he has learned it. And though much is said by him, not a single word has gone without having any effect on me, says Ramachandra to Lakshmana. Ramachandra says this to Lakshmana. So, at that time, what was he saying was, his point was that without studying Rigvedam, he couldn't have spoken like this. Because what does Rigvedam does? It creates this culture in a person of humility. That's what Rigvedam does. This is how Shastram is. Shastram has to have its effect on the person. Not theoretically study a lot of books and study the Shastram. And otherwise he could not have spoken like this, he says. Then he must have studied Samavedam, he must have studied Yajurvedam. And all the speciality of the different Vedam is spoken there. Why it is like that is, if you look into the hymns in the Rigvedam, all the Rigvedam hymns are paying obeisances to Vishnu and to other Devadas. Continuously paying obeisances, namaskaram. Paying obeisances is Rigvedam. So that is why Rigveda Brahmanas, they pay a lot more obeisances than others. You will see in the old ancient temples, when you go, when the Brahmana communities live there, they will be continuously paying obeisances every day, hundreds, thousand times some of them. If there is no space inside, they will go out. And standing there, they will be continuously paying obeisances to the deity, chanting the hymns. And that brings humility in a person by paying these obeisances. It brings humility in a person. We walk with the heads like this. That's our tradition. All the heads high all the time. But Brahmana tradition is that always paying obeisances brings humility inside. That is why it is Rigvedam is for that purpose. The Rigvedic tradition brings humility in a person. Then all the Rigveda Suktam is meant for that. If you look into the Suktams itself, you will see this. Saying different hymns, addressing the deity and paying obeisances. Addressing the deity and paying obeisances. So, therefrom, when he first paid obeisances itself, Ramchandra noticed that in Hanuman. That quality, and said that he has the Rigvedam in him. And his natural humility, Ramchandra says, when I see that, he says he knows Rigvedam very well. He says like that. He knows Rigvedam very well. And definitely he has performed Rigveda Upasana. Upasana of the Rigvedam. Then he says that when I look at his memory power and Medha Shakti and memory power, when I look at that, I think he is Yajurvedi. He says, because Yajurvedam is Karmakandam, isn't it? 80% of it is people have to remember and recite it. Yajurvedam is like that. That means you should have a good Medha Shakti. That's why they teach them when they are very small children. 3-4 years old, they start training them up. And so that by age of 25-30, they become completely trained in that. If you go into some of the schools or Gurukulams where they are teaching the Brahmana children how to recite the Vedam, you will see day after day continuously reciting the Vedam. Yajurvedam it is mostly. And he says there that when I look at him, Ramchandra says to Lakshmana, I see a kind of simplicity and a softness in his heart, and therefore I can say that he knows Samavedam well. Samavedi's nature. And whatever he has spoken, there is not one word which is unwelcome. Everything is so welcoming, he says there. So when they saw Hanuman like that, Ramchandra says, I can say personified Vedam is standing in front of me. He says like that. So from this you can understand, Vedam is not a book. It's a samskara in a person. It's a culture in a person. So, and knowledge, austerities, and maturity, that you will notice when you see such a person. And the essence of all this, which one? This knowledge, austerity, maturity, simplicity, and tolerance, all that culture, the essence of all that is knowledge of the self. Is knowledge of the self, Brahmavidya. In other words, so you can see when Brahmavidya is present in a person properly, that person will have these things associated with that. Simplicity, knowledge, austerity, and that maturity in him, and he will have these things what Hanuman has exhibited here, those kind of qualities will be in abundance in a person like that. And therefore, Upanishads also, and that Upanishads also talk about the same Brahmavidya, isn't it? Brahmavidya. So the essence of all that Upanishads is what Krishna is giving us in the Bhagavad Gita, is it not? Sarva Upanishado Gavo Dogdha Gopala Nandana Partho Valsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gizamrtam Mahat. So, so if you can compare all the Upanishads as the cows, and if you are milking those cows, that milk is Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is the milk that you have milked from the Upanishad cows. Upanishad cows. Saying this to Arjuna, isn't it? And there, Acharya Swami uses a word about to Arjuna, Nimitti Krityam. Nimitti Krityam means, Arjuna is only there as a Nimittam. He is not the one to whom actually Bhagavad Gita is addressed to. Bhagavad Gita is addressed to us. But Nimitti Krityam, keeping him as a in friend, as a person to whom Krishna is speaking, but actually addressing to us. And Krishna is saying Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying Bhagavad Gita, addressing us actually, but using Arjuna as the Nimittam. Nimittam it is, isn't it? So that is how it is spoken. So there you can see that Sarva Upanishado Gavo Dogdha Gopala Partho Valsa Sudhi. The word Sudhi. Sudhi means we have to ask this question to ourselves. Are we Sudhi? Dhi means our intelligence. Sudhi means purified intelligence, good intelligence. So, question is, do we have the same goal in our intelligence of realizing the self? Is that there in us? That is what Sudhi word means. When Krishna said that about Arjuna, Sudhi, Partho Valsa Sudhir Bhokta, Bhokta is Sudhi. That means you have to have that conviction inside that this Bhagavad Gita will get me out of this material existence once for all. And I have taken shelter of Bhagavad Gita and Krishna to get myself free from this bodily existence. That is the important point. So, who is Sudhi? Sudhi means, one who, Sudhi means, first thing he realizes is this, that there is distress in the world. There is distress in the world. And it is not only Krishna has spoken this, Acharya has spoken this, no, Buddha has spoken this. Buddha himself has spoken this. And that is why Buddha's whole tradition is not different from the Sanatana Dharma. It's exactly the same. Sanatana Dharma also says the same thing, that there is distress in this world. It is not a place for gentlemen, Prabhupada used to say. It's not a place for gentlemen. Can't live here as a gentleman. It's not possible. And it's the same principle in Buddha also spoken. So there is practically no difference at all between Buddha. So first thing is to know that there is distress here. There is distress here. And on the one side, we see the distress everywhere, isn't it? Distress everywhere. But on the other side, Vedami says there is a solution to the problem. There is a solution to the problem. And a person who sees both, who sees the distress and who sees the solution, he is Sudhi. That is Sudhi. It is from there Vyavasayalpaya Buddhi comes to a person. It's not a determination coming from the mind, but comes from this realization in life that there is distress in this world and there is a solution to the problem. If these two things are present in a person, he is Sudhi. Partho Valsa Sudhir Bhokta. Only that person will relish Bhagavad Gita. A person who sees the distress of this world and a person who knows there is a solution in this world, that person will relish Bhagavad Gita. He is Sudhi. Partho Valsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gidamritam Mahat. We say that, isn't it? It is from there it says. So there is distress in this world, knowing that. Krishna mentions that, isn't it? Janmam, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadhi. Dukkha-doshanu-darshanam, he says. Dukkha-doshanu-darshanam. We just sing the song, but we don't see any dukkha. Where is the dukkha, we say. Everything is going very well. All the bills are paid. And life is going on very well. Family is all well settled. House mortgage has been paid off. Pension is coming. Where is the problem? What are you talking about this? This is our concept of life. That is not what Krishna is talking about here. Then to understand that there is distress in this world, it's difficult for most of the people, isn't it? So, only thing is to keep your eyes open a little bit. So, those who have lived in this world for some time, you don't have to tell them. They'll know it. But you have to live in this world for some time as a family man. Then you will know what it is. Then nobody has to tell you that there is distress in this world, isn't it? Particularly householders. Because they experience this, what? Death, disease, and separation from the close family members, and plus ragadvesham that created in life, through all this thing. And all of them creates distress, is it not? Ragadvesham creates distress. Similarly, separation from the family members, when they turn against you, and totally unexpectedly whole thing changes, the scenario at home, and all other problems of old age, disease, associated. When all these things comes together, if you're still saying there is no distress in this world, there's something wrong with us, isn't it? Only then you can say that there is no distress in this world. So many things will go wrong in life. Everything can go wrong. And that is why Krishna is saying there that when he said janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshan darshanam, people take it that janmam, birth, oh, only then, but in the middle there is no problem, that's they are asking. Birth is a problem, death is, okay, we'll accept that. But what about the middle? I'm enjoying life. This is all they say. No, but there are so many other problems. Jara vyadi dukkha doshan darshanam. It is from beginning to end, it is distress. Nothing but distress. One form, one way or the other. So, Maya never allows anybody to enjoy here. Maya won't allow. Her way is that, as I mentioned many times before, that she will give you a lot of distress and then she will put one Cadbury's into your mouth and give you a good slap after that. So, this is the way Maya works in this world. And we are continuously subjected to this day after day after day. And still we say, oh no, everything is... How are you? Fine. What fine? Who is fine here? Nobody is fine, isn't it? So, this principle, Krishna is saying here, that this problem will never go away. This will remain like this. You will never be able to change this. Even if the science has advanced, whatever extent it has advanced, this nature of our life in this world is not going to change and there is no solution to this problem. The more science is advancing, the problems get more complex and more sophisticated. That's what we find, isn't it? In a scientific, so-called scientific society, the problems are more complex than in a simple village where science is not so much in practice. In a scientifically structured society, the complexity of the problems is much more complex than in the simple society in a village where the science is not in control so much. But there is no solution. So, first thing is this dukkha darshanam, what Krishna says. Janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam. This dukkha darshanam is the first thing. The seeing this dukkham, distress in life, this is the most important thing. That is why in prior to this Vedantam, before we enter into this chapter, this is what is called the Purvapidhya. Purvapidhya means introduction into that. So, let Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, all other Prakarana Grantham, whatever it may be, the introduction is based on this understanding that dukkham is there, distress is there, and we want a solution to the problem, solution to this distress. So, this pre-qualification this is called. One who has got this distress, he is qualified to hear Bhagavad Gita. He is qualified to hear Bhagavad Gita. Only if you have this pre-qualification, then you can hear Bhagavad Gita properly. You can hear Bhagavad Gita properly because this chapter, whole of Bhagavad Gita is like that. But this particular chapter, 17th chapter, is all about Shraddha. All about Shraddha. If Shraddha has to develop inside, it can only happen when there is distress inside. Otherwise Shraddha won't come. Shraddha won't come. So, to hear seriously these 28 verses in this chapter, this pre-qualification is the most necessary thing, most important thing. That means always conscious, I am suffering and there is distress in life. This realization all the time, it's important to have it. Otherwise, you can't hear it. You won't hear and you won't understand and you will leave it. You will leave it behind. So, are we not experiencing distress all the time? Yes, we are. But not like whenever somebody says, yes, we can. Not that. Like Obama says, yes, we can. That won't work with Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is saying that to us, that when you are experiencing this in life, and you have to learn how to absorb it in the mind, that distress when you are experiencing it in life. All of us are experiencing distress, but in different ways. In different ways. So we have to know, whatever distress individually anyone is experiencing it, how to take it inside, into the mind. And only then Vairagyam will come. Otherwise Vairagyam won't happen. And because, what does Vairagyam mean? Vairagyam means, we say renunciation. Renunciation is not throwing away everything. Oh, I've become a renunciate now, so I'll only wear one dhoti from now on. I'll have only one dhoti. That is not Vairagyam. Vairagyam means when the miseries and distress of life, have you taken it very seriously in life? And due to that, that experiences in life has taught us something, that and to look at things with knowledge, to look at all our experiences with knowledge, and with that knowledge able to discriminate in life properly, and the knowledge that comes from that, that is called Vairagyam. Vairagyam is not simply giving up things without any realization. That you will give it up. A lot of people are giving up in this world because they don't have it. If you don't have it, you can give up. It's not, and I can tell others also. That's not Vairagyam. Vairagyam in strict sense is that after seeing the distress in this world and all the miseries of this world, it has affected our mind so deeply that we became very inward looking. And we started looking at our experiences with that knowledge of the self from Bhagavad Gita or the understanding, with proper knowledge, observing that and able to deal with that situation with a discrimination, proper discrimination. At that time, a knowledge develops inside in that person. That's called Vairagyam. Remember, Krishna says in the 6th chapter, Yam labdhva chabaram labham manyade natiyam tada yat siddhoina dukkhena gurunapi vijalyade tam vidya dukkasam yogam vyogam yogasam idam. There is a verse, very famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying that when the distress comes to very high level, in a very big level, very serious distress comes in life, emlabdhva chabaram labham manyate nathiyam tada. If this knowledge has developed inside, this vairagyam has developed inside, yasmin sthidona dukkhena guruna abhivijalyade, even if it is the highest order distress has come to you in life, it will come, some form it will come. It can happen to anybody, any time, isn't it? You can, whole body can become useless. You can be sick. The whole life changes. Is it not? Or something, someone close to you has left, departed, and you are lost in this world. Similarly, anything can happen in life, but when the distress comes, how we are dealing with that distress, that's the most important thing. Distress is not the important thing. How you are dealing with that distress is more important. That is what Krishna is saying here. That whatever experiences we have in life, full of distress when it comes, and that experiences, if you are able to look at it with knowledge,
properly, how to analyze it, and with discrimination able to deal with it, for which you require some knowledge inside, and that knowledge comes called Vairagyam. That knowledge is called Vairagyam. Because when you look around in life, you can see in your own family life, in your own individual's life, you're running all the time to become happy here in this world, and at every step, that's what Krishna says here, that every step there is distress in life. In the Bhagavadam, you will see this. Vidura asked Maitreya Maharshi the same question, isn't it? So everybody is working hard in this world for happiness, but nobody is asking for dukkham or distress, and it is coming plenty. Sukhaya karmani karoti loke. You will see that verse there in the Bhagavadam. So that is why this dukkham is there. To recognize that is a very, it's a kind of illusion in our head that everything is wonderful here. It doesn't exist like that. Just like when you go to the shops and buy something, you buy one, you get one free, isn't it? Similarly, when you get a material body, human body, along with that, the Krishna has given this also to us. You buy one, get one free. And that's dukkha. That's dukkha. This body itself is the best example, isn't it? Body itself is the best example. Then, as you get, body gets sick, body gets old, body is not able to do what it is, what you have done before, and you become a little bit disappointed about everything, isn't it? So, so along with this material body, attached to that, there is this free thing, what is called dukkham. You don't have to ask for it. It has come free with the body. It has come free with the body. You can say, I don't have any distress, I am okay. But, and for some time, when you don't have it, you will forget about it. And that is the nature of this distress. For a few days, if you don't get much of a problems in life, then you start thinking, oh, everything is okay, things are normal. And but then suddenly a thunderbolt comes and smashes on the head from somewhere. So, but if you give some attention to life, and or if you live in this world for some time, you will notice these things. That you can see, even in the planets, they say, sometime you have Venus, and then Saturn will come. Isn't it? It's not always Venus, is it? The Saturn will come. So, even if distress has not come to us directly, when you see the distress of others, you see, and it creates fear, isn't it? It creates fear. That itself is distress. Because expectations is a distress. It's a distress. Many people, they say they don't have any distress, but they know very well distress will come one day. And they are waiting for that to come. They know it's on its way. It's going to come. And that itself is a distress. So, that is why Bhartrihari mentions this in the Vairagya Shatakam. He mentions this, isn't it? This is all our nature. He is saying this. Asha nama nadi manorada jala trishna taranga kula ragagrahavati vidarka vihaga Dhairya Dhruma Dhumsini Mohavarta Sudustaradi Gahanam Protunga Chindatadi Tasya Pragada Vishuddhamanaso Nandandi Yogi Ishwaraha. It's the 10th verse in the Bhartrihari's famous Vairagya Shatakam. He says here, desires inside, it's like a river, it's flowing all the time. And what is the water there in the river? Manoratha jalaha. Manoratham, all the mental chariot is there. And that means imagining so many things. I'm going to have this, I'm going to have that. I'll be happy in this way, I'll be happy in this way. So many misconceptions in my head that I'm going to be happy. And plus, I want more of this, more of that. All these trishna, desires. And it's like strong waves, it's going around inside. Trishna tarangam kadham. And there is also big crocodiles in there, in that water. What is that? Ragagrahavati. Attachment. I get caught up in that. Attachment are considered to be the crocodiles. You get attached to somewhere, to various things, and you can't do anything about it. So, then he mentions here that Ragagrahavati Vigarkavihaga Dairya Dhumam Dhumsini. All these things, when it happens inside, we lose our shanti inside, isn't it? We become very disturbed, distressed inside. And at the same time, Dhairya Dhruma Dhumsini, our courage and all our ability immediately gets questioned. We feel doubtful about ourselves. When we study Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Upanishads, after that, when we have developed some bhakti or jnanam inside, when we start thinking that, is this all can be changed, can that be rectified, you will start getting doubt about that. When this is one problem, when you start reading Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and when you look at yourself, you start doubting, is it possible for me to develop all these things? What Bhagavad Gita is saying, what Bhagavatam is saying, this doubt will come. And that is what he is saying here, that vidarka vihagaha dhairya dhruvan dhumsini. After studying Shastram, you become very argumentative. You will say that it's not possible to do all these things, what Bhagavad Gita is saying, Bhagavatam is saying, and you lose your courage straight away. Dhairya dhruma dhumsini. You lose your dhairya, courage from that. So, then he says here, in that mohavartas sudusaradi gahanam protungana chindadi. What else is present there? There is some birds there. They are already there, and when those birds are sitting there, the tree is already swinging both ways in the wind. It is swinging both ways in the wind. And always the fear is the tree going to fall. Like the bird is sitting on a tree and the tree is swinging in the heavy winds, how the tree swings, isn't it? Or in the rain, heavy rain and things. So the bird sitting on the tree is thinking, courage is going, fearful you become. And there is this illusion which is the whirlpools in our mind, and it's very difficult to cross over them. Who cross over them? Nandandi Yogishwaraha. That means yogis, they will cross over them. How? Those who can cross them, they are the yogis. So, important thing is that there is distress in life, and that too to recognize that and to get that inside our mind. And we have seen that on the one side, that distress, what exists in human life, in our life in this world. On the other hand, you have the desire to be happy as well. Sukham. You want to have sukham. So, that desire never goes away from inside, isn't it, to become happy. In spite of all problems coming in life, still you are hoping that it will be okay one day. I'll be happy. Happiness is going to come. You will never give up your desire for happiness. That is what keeps us going every day, isn't it? So, if you start thinking, can I not live without any happiness at all? And why can't I live without any happiness? What's wrong with that? Just accept that distress is our life in this world. So, if you think like that, when people say that, you adjust your life in such a way that distress is coming, you accept that, that is a life in this world. Sukham, happiness, there is no point in looking for that because it is never going to come. And in that way, why don't we adjust life and live like that? So that question will come. People may ask that question, isn't it? One person went to an astrologer. He told him that, astrologer told him, next 10 years, you're going to have a very hard time. People go to astrologers for all sorts of things, isn't it? So, always looking for, when is that day going to come, I'm going to be happy, they say. So after 10, because he was in distress, that's why he went to the astrologer. So astrologer told him that next 10 years is a very difficult period, he said. So then this man asked him, who went to the astrologer, he said, after that 10 years, what will happen? He said, by then you'll get used to it, he said. So this will go. So this astrologers and all is like this. It's not the real solution to the problem, isn't it? We have a lot of devotees also go to astrologers, thinking that all the solution is. They won't chant Hare Krishna, they'll go to the astrologer to solve the problem. And then they'll say, Prabhupada has gone to astrologer. We'll say like that. Only 2 days ago, Prabhupada says that going to an astrologer is the most foolish thing to do. So, if you say that, why don't you adjust like that? It's not possible because Sukham is our Swarupam. That is the problem. Our nature is Satya Chitta Anandam, isn't it? Sachidanandam it is. Blissful nature is a nature of the self, Atma. So Atma won't allow you to sit quiet. It will continuously push from inside how to become happy. Look for a solution, isn't it? And Dukkham, distress is not our Swarupam. Distress is not our Swarupam. What's happening now is, all the time there is Dukkham in us, and Sukham we think it is nothing to do with me. This is the way we live in this world. But Shastram is telling us, Sukham is your Swarupam, Dukkham is not your Swarupam. Who will tell us if Shastram was not there? Who will tell us this? That is why Shastram is important. You see, things what Shastram, this is the revelation or the realization of the sages. Rishis are telling us, Dukkham is not your Swarupam, Sukham is your Swarupam. You are meant to be always blissful, never meant to be suffering or experience this Dukkham. But it's just the opposite what we are going through at the moment. What is the proof for that? Proof is there. What is the proof? Deep sleep. Deep sleep is the proof for this, isn't it? Because in deep sleep state, think what we can never have it otherwise. Even if you want to experience distress in the deep sleep, you can't have it in the deep sleep, isn't it? So, so that is why he says here, that thing what you are looking for, you yourself have this experience every night. In the deep sleep. And it is not in the Bhagavad Gita, it is not in the Upanishads, that happiness is inside us. That happiness is inside us. Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads is only pointing out to that, this truth to us. And this is has come from the Rishis. Rishis has given us this and it has come to us in that way. Otherwise it cannot be known. Who has analyzed like the way Rishis have analyzed this? They have told us that in the deep sleep state, that is the proof that your real nature is happiness and not distress. Whereas we are only know one thing as the distress. That's the only thing. Isn't it? So, every time when we wake up, all what we say that I slept well. Isn't it? So, you look at this way. So, what is indicating to us is, in our deepermost core, there is happiness. In our deepermost core, there is happiness. In the happiness and distress is present in the vacant state, in the Jagrat state. Happiness and distress is present in the dream state. But in the deep sleep, there is only happiness. So see the difference between the three states. Krishna says this in the Bhagavadam. Jagrat sapna sushuptinja nivritto gunavrtaya sasam vilakshano jiva sakshitvena vinischida. That sakshi who is present inside in the deep sleep state, he only experiences that happiness in the deep sleep. In the Jagrat and Sapnam, these two states, you have both happiness as well as distress. In the vacant state, as well as in the dream state. But once you move into the deep sleep state, that there is only happiness there. And that is the proof that our actual identity is happiness and not distress. But today we are experiencing only distress, not experiencing any happiness. So you can see where we are now, in what state we are. And that is the first and most important thing Krishna is saying here. So that indicating to us that distress cannot enter into sushupti, into deep sleep. Distress cannot enter there. And it's not possible. That's what it is showing here. So if you say that there is a happiness which is not mixed with the distress, normally our happiness and distress is a little bit mixed, isn't it? Sometimes when there is not too much distress, we say it's happy, I'm happy. When there is not much distress, you say you're happy, is it not? Similarly, real happiness is not experienced any time. It's all a covered kind of happiness, isn't it? So, but here, in deep sleep state, Krishna is saying to us, that is your swarupam. Swarupam means there is nothing else mixed with that. It's pure, in its pure form. And this is the reason that, and that this knowledge is inside every one of us. All of us have that knowledge. And this is the reason why we want to sleep. Why we want to sleep in the for many hours, especially when you have deep sleep, you don't want to wake up because there is happiness there. That is the reason behind it. So, you can see people when they find it very difficult to get up in the morning. Say you got up in the middle of the night, say 2 o'clock or so, you look at the watch and you see, oh, still there is few hours left. You're not getting up and start doing things. You want to sleep. Why? Because that side is working then. The happiness side is working there. And if somebody tells you, oh, there's still 3 hours left, you feel great happiness at that time. So, after a few days, you're getting married, imagine. You're getting married. And still, you have preference for the sleep than the marriage. So, you will still say that I prefer to sleep. Even though marriage is going to happen after a few days, you don't lose your sleep over that. You still like to sleep. So, so somebody mentions to you, there's a few more hours to sleep. What an amount of happiness that brings in. What is the reason? Because what did you achieve in that deep sleep state? What did you attain there? And did you get anything? Nothing. You didn't get anything. Only thing is, you gave up everything. Is it not? The mind was gone. Body was gone. You are not a king. You are not a minister. You are not a pauper. Upanishad says, Raja na bhavadi, Rani na bhavadi, Vedaha vedaha bhavadi, Mada mada bhavadi, Pida pida bhavadi. Nothing like that. There is no father, no mother, no children, no parents, no wife, no husband, no identity anywhere. And you have thrown away everything. Isn't it? All identities, you have thrown it away. And you are happy. This sushupti state, if properly analyzed, it will open our eyes. It will open our eyes. Krishna spoke about this to Uddhava. Krishna spoke about this to the gopis. And in various places in the Bhagavadam, you will see this again and again repeated. Jagrat, Svapnam, Sushupti, the three states, how it's been analyzed. So, nothing there. And still you are saying, you are not mother there, you are not father there. Isn't it? And still you are saying, I slept, I was happy there. And this is our daily experience. But we won't give any attention to it. We won't give any attention to it. This is the problem. Won't give any attention to it. So, for that purpose, there is small sadhanas in the spiritual life recommended for that. So, while going to bed in the night, in absorbing to some little extent in Vedantam, analyzing from the Vedantic point of view, rather than going to sleep, watching the telly and going to sleep like that, instead, little bit of analysis about spiritual life within, before we go to sleep. So, when we go to sleep, if you go with that understanding, consciousness, when we wake up, you can see there, again, absorb in the same thing. Go into sleep in that way, because nobody gets a deep sleep from, say, 9 to 4. You don't get it. By the time you get some deep sleep, it's about 3 o'clock in the morning, isn't it? First many hours, all the problems of the day will come. And they will deal with you through the mind in the dream state. And all the nonsense what we have done in the world will be there. That will also work through. And plus all the purva vasanas what we had cultivated, that will all come up. So many hours in the first, deep sleep is very difficult unless one has taken what Hiranyakashipu takes. And we are talking about ordinary people, normal people. So that deep sleep, when you come and you get it, at that time you can see that waking up from that and then observe the deep sleep state, what was happening there. Most of the times we will wake up through a dream. Most of the days we'll wake up from the dream. It's rarely we wake up from the deep sleep straight away. From deep sleep you'll come to the dream state, and from the dream state you'll wake up. You may have got some deep sleep in between. It's a very serious subject, eh? It's a very serious subject. And at the same time, it's a simple topic as well. But it is all your own experience, isn't it? So, here, many, many Swamijis, Sannyasis, in the past, what they have done, it's their experience that they have spoken about this. And it is also our experience. Only thing is, they have taken it seriously. We didn't take it seriously. We didn't give enough time to analyze this or to study it properly. So it's our own experience. And when you go to bed in the night, if it is possible, remember this, that this whole day our activities were under the influence of Maya, isn't it? Maya has meant me to run around and do various things in this life. And when we wake up in the morning, during the deep sleep, we had no contact with anything what we have done during the day. In the morning when you wake up, they are all coming back to us, isn't it? So remember, what was the state in the deep sleep then? What was happening then? In the deep sleep state, everything what you have done, you were able to leave it behind, and they have come back in the morning. Everything has come back to you from last day's activities. Whatever you had to remember, it has come. It has come back. So if you look at it this way, what was I doing sometime before, and whether was I a good person or a bad person, or was I a Brahmana or a Vaishya or a Shudra or a man or a woman? And what did I do there in that deep sleep state? In this way, if you manage to turn your intelligence inwards, Rishis are telling us that if you practice this on everyday basis, very easily your mind will turn inwards. Very easily it will turn inwards. Only thing what you have to do is, while going to bed, remember this, what has absorbed in the Vedantam. That means these three states of existence, analyze it inside. In the morning, if you had a good deep sleep, when you wake up, look at what has happened during the day before, how you are able to leave that behind, and in the deep sleep what you have experienced, completely free from all the other activities of the day before, and then it has come back to you, and what is that thing that has made this happen? If you analyze it like way, that buddhi will become andarmukham. Andarmukham means it will go in. Otherwise it will simply become an external activity. This is the way. So, at some point in time, the Rishi says to us that you will get a glimpse of that deep sleep state properly. In other words, dihi pashyati parampadam. That means you will get a very slight experience of that deep sleep state in your vacant state. That's the Rishi's conclusions. Rishi's conclusions. This is, of course, this is the Jnanamargam, what's spoken in it generally. But in bhakti also this can happen. Bhakti leads to jnanam in that way. So, 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 before the sunrise, you have to get up for this, before the sunrise. So, that state, when you have woken up, when you experience in the wakened state, a glimpse of the deep sleep state, that time you will know. How will you know that? Because you will know that you are not experiencing the body in you. You won't experience your own body, that bodiless state or a mindless state. That is that experience, how it comes. How that deep sleep state penetrates into the wakened state and it experiences in the form of bodiless state or a mindless state. Mindless state. Apranohi amanaha shubhra, Vedam says like this. Pranan is not there, mind is not there, intelligence is not there, body is not there, and individual personality is also not there. Vyaktitvam or personality also doesn't exist. So all these things, what is experienced in the deep sleep state, through a little sadhana, Vedam says, Upanishads also says, it can be brought into our experience in the vacant state. But it won't come continuously. Initially it won't come continuously. You will get a glimpse of that experience. Like sometimes they say that just like a line, it will come through in your own experience if you practice it. That is what Upanishads says about that. And importantly there, that your body you don't experience, existence of the mind is not there, intelligence is not there, and including your own personality is not there, ego is not there, ego is not there. All of them goes missing at that time. And at that time you know that that happiness what you have experienced in the deep sleep state, that is not happiness that you get by working or doing something. You know, it's a very finer thing. That is why it's difficult to people like, if you give them a task, then they are like happy. Because they know, if I do this, I'll get it. This is not something by doing you will get it. This is something what will come by this abhyasam. And if when the mind, body, intelligence, ego, everything goes away, you see, in a natural way, sukham comes from inside. A feeling of shanti, a feeling of satisfaction inside, comes from inside without any external effort. Only then you will recognize that our real nature is sukham and not dukham. This is the proof for that. Do you know what I'm saying? That when we say sukham means happiness, is our swarupam and not dukham, it has to be experienced, isn't it? And the way to experience that, to some small extent, is possible if this sadhana is followed, they say. Jnani says like this. So, another practically you can see, it is not by working and getting something that you have become happy. Instead, by throwing out everything away, throwing the body away, the mind away, intelligence away, and including the ego away, when everything is thrown out, in a natural way, happiness came out from the self. Happiness came out from the self. And this is an experience to be practiced and experienced, but it is a demonstration of the what this simple sadhana is for that purpose. And to prove it to us, by working hard, by doing a lot, you're not going to become happy. Happiness won't come from that. And they say that In the Bhagavad Gita's commentary says, na ulpadyam, na apyam, na samskaryam, na vikaryam, na kartrutva bhoktra rupam va. Acharya Swami mentions in the Bhashyam this, that it is not by working hard, or it's not by going somewhere, or by purifying something, or by emotional transformation, నో నా కర్తృత్వ భోక్తృత్వ రూపం వా బై ఐఎమ్ ద డూయర్ ఐఎమ్ ది ఎంజాయర్ విచ్ ఈస్ వెరీ స్ట్రాంగ్లీ ఇన్సైడ్ వెన్ దాట్ లీవ్స్ ఫ్రమ్ ఇన్సైడ్ దాట్ ఈస్ వెన్ దిస్ హ్యాపీనెస్ కమ్స్ ఫ్రమ్ ది సెల్ఫ్ సో అండ్ దాట్ ఈస్ వై దీస్ ఫోర్ థింగ్స్ ఉల్పాద్యం ఆప్యం సంస్కార్యం వైకార్యం దాట్స్ ద ఫోర్ థింగ్స్ ఫోర్ ఆస్పెక్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ ద కర్మం ఇన్ కర్మం ఓన్లీ దీస్ ఫోర్ థింగ్స్ హ్యాపన్ ఉల్పాద్యం ఆప్యం సంస్కార్యం వికార్యం ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఇఫ్ యూ లుక్ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ యూ విల్ సీ ఇట్ విల్ ఫాలో ఇన్ టు వన్ ఆఫ్ దీస్ కేటగరీస్ ఐదర్ యూ మ్యానుఫ్యాక్చర్ సంథింగ్ ఆర్ యూ హ్యావ్ టు అచీవ్ సంథింగ్ ఆర్ యూ హ్యావ్ టు ప్యూరిఫై సంథింగ్ ఆర్ యూ హ్యావ్ టు ట్రాన్స్ఫార్మ్ వన్ థింగ్ టు అనదర్ అండ్ ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్ ఇఫ్ యూ ఆర్ డూయింగ్ థింకింగ్ దట్ ఐఎమ్ ద డూయర్ అండ్ ఐఎమ్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్సింగ్ దట్ you can't touch that happiness at that point. So in order to and these things don't happen in the sushupti. That is why sushupti is glorified so much. Why sushupti is glorified? Because it's only in sushupti kartrutva bhoktrutvam goes away, doer and the enjoyer goes away, raga dvesham goes away. Is it not? Raga dvesham is not there, kartrutva bhoktrutvam is not there, and karmam is not there. Therefore you have the highest happiness than any other time. So, and that experience, what you have at that moment, which you may experience for a very, very glimpse or a short period, that is our existence, satta, awareness, in other words, and that is what we are. That is to prove that, to what we are. We are not the body. That's good enough to say that we are not. Then what are we? That question will come, isn't it? That verse in the Bhagavatam, if you look, vadandita tattvavidam tattvam. Yet jnanam, that knowledge, that realization, advayam, no duality there, oneness. Why oneness? Because that jnanam, advaya jnanam, is one. The sushupti knowledge or sushupti experience of you, yourself, him, me, it's all same. They are not different, are they? In sushupti, when we experience something, and that experience of me and anybody in this room, it's all the same thing. It's not different. That is why, and that is a time when you can say that advaya jnanam is there in a person. That is what that is. Adandita tattvaidam tattvam yat jnanam advayam. One without a second. No duality there. No duality there. So that is in everyone. That's there in everybody. Without the, without being affected by the body, mind or the intelligence. That cannot touch that. That experience, what Advaita Jnanam, what Bhagavatam says, that cannot be touched by body, that cannot be touched by mind, that cannot be touched by the intelligence, and that is in everyone. So, so not only that, apart from that, whom I am thinking about myself, or all of you are thinking about yourself, that personality, even he has no contact with that Advaita Jnanam. He has no contact with Advaita Jnanam. And that purnada, perfection there, there is perfection in that, that experience, that is our satta. Satta means our existence. Our existence. And it is perfect and it is always pure. It's always pure. This is why when we address the soul, we call it as Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. It is Nityam, eternal. It is Shuddham. It's very pure, extremely pure. And it is always conscious. Fully conscious, and it is always liberated, untouched by the modes of nature. Modes of nature cannot touch soul, cannot touch the soul, isn't it? So very subtle subjects these things are. And unless you study Bhagavad Gita in that way, you won't get into the Bhagavad Gita. You will be on the surface hovering around this saying, Krishna said all these things, these are all the good injunctions, these are all the bad, difficult injunctions. It will remain on the injunctions only. But it is a very subtle science what Krishna is saying there in the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna is saying there, that is what you are. That existence there, which is completely untouched. Keeping all this in the perspective, you have to study Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, you won't get deeper into it. When Krishna is going to talk about now three divisions of faith, you know how people read it? They read it saying that there's three modes of nature, Satyam, Rajasam, Tamasam. And immediately they think, on which group do I belong to? That's all they want to know. In which group am I falling into? What's the use knowing this? You won't know it like that. There's a whole science behind it. I was mentioning last time also, why is Bhagavad Gita's position so unique in this world? Because no one else, there is no other scripture in this world who presents the knowledge of the soul, the science of the soul, so scientifically like Bhagavad Gita does. There's nobody can argue about that. If you can show me another scripture in this world which has got such a fineness of the knowledge of the soul like Bhagavad Gita has done, then you have to ask a question there, isn't it? So that is why all the great authorities in spiritual life, they go after Bhagavad Gita. For this reason only, that Krishna has spoken so precisely everything without involving in any kind of argument about who is God, what is God. This is not the question. Question is pointing to us, realize the truth first inside, everything will be clear after that. You don't have to run around looking anywhere. What's that about? So that is where it's coming from. Krishna is saying here, that is your surubam. That is your identity, Krishna is saying here. So as soon as you woke up, what has happened? False ego got up. Before you got up, false ego gets up, isn't it? And as soon as you, then what do you say? Me, I am, I am. I am is very strong. So, so just like the body is here now in Edgeware, and I felt like doing certain things. But before that, the Abhimana Vritti means this ego has woken up inside. And it has woken up, and before it goes into, dissolves in the night. And in between what is there? So once the ego dissolves in the night, and then the ego wakes up in the morning, which we are, our individuality in other words, there is an existence, a state, perfection in us, in that deep sleep state, isn't it? And that was not, that we didn't get it by working for it. Is it not? It came to us on its own. That's the beauty of that. We didn't work for that happiness and perfection, shanti, purnada, in the deep sleep state. It came on its own without any effort, isn't it? And that is nitya siddham, permanently available to us, and that is our swarupam. That is our swarupam. So that is why in Vedantam they say that you don't have to work for happiness. All you have to do is get rid of the ajnanam inside, that avidya inside. That is the purpose of sarsangam also. Sarsangam is to get rid of the ajnanam from inside. So that coverage inside, or the curtain inside, remove that curtain from inside. And then you will see that perfection, shanti, or happiness, it's already there inside everyone. And that perfection is us. And and body, mind, intelligence, ego, they are all the imperfections in us. They are all the imperfections in us. Isn't it? Anything you look at it, body is imperfect, mind is imperfect, intelligence is imperfect, ego is imperfect, senses are imperfect. Everything else is imperfect in this package, except that consciousness, bodham. So senses, if you look, you can see there that senses will come into action when the mind is active. Mind is active. And senses will disappear when the mind is not functioning. So they are closely connected to each other. Is it not? Mind and the senses are closely connected to each other. So, practically you can say the senses are inside the mind. Inside the mind. When the mind wakes up, everything wakes up. When the mind dissolves, everything dissolves. So this limitation of that is called parichinnatvam. Parichinnatvam is the word used in the Shastram. And this limitation of this mind and the senses is the cause of all our distress. This, if you subtle way, in a very subtle way, if you look at it, you will understand this. That because our mind and the senses are imperfect, that is what is causing us this problem of distress in life. You see? Because if mind was perfect and if senses were perfect, you cannot experience distress. This imperfection in the mind, imperfection in the senses, is making us, this limitation, what they call it, is the cause of all our distress. All our distress. So as long as this limitation is there in the mind and the senses, you will have to continuously experience distress. There is no solution to the problem. And that is why Vedam, Upanishads are telling us, come out of the mind, come out of the senses. Yeah. That is why when you study Bhagavatam also, you have to keep these things, because these are the important things in the Bhagavatam, where when instructions are given at different places in the glorifications or direct injunctions, like Rehugana is instructed by Bharata. What is he saying there? He has only one thing to tell Rehugana. If you study, you will get the whole essence there. If you look into Rehugana, Bharata Rehugana Samvadam, in three words, the whole thing what he wants to say, he has spoken to Rehugana. He told Rehugana, Rehugana, remember this, as long as there is a mind, mind is nothing but avidya, ignorance it is. And if the mind is working, avidya is working. If avidya is working, you have to suffer. Get rid of the mind from inside. Mind has to go. Mind has to go. Either through jnanam or through bhakti or through karmam. Doesn't matter. Mind has to go. This mind, you can't keep the mind and try to be happy in this world. It will be a futile exercise we'll do. If you look into that verse, you will see, I'll mention those. If when you have time, you can look at Bhagavatam, and if you find interesting, you can read it, see what he says. In the fifth canto, in the Bharata Rehugana Samvadam. 5.11.16 is important, but when did he says to him, look at Brahmana, next 5.12, you look at 5.12, ninth verse. In three words, Bharata told Rahugana, avidyaya manasa kalpitaste. See that? Avidyaya manasa kalpitaste. Avidya is there inside. The mind is the one behind it. Mind does kalpana. It keeps on throwing different things to us. Everything is avidyaya manasa kalpitaste. Everything. All what we are doing in this world is in these three words. Avidyaya manasa kalpitaste. Mind is telling me, if I do this, I'll be happy. I go to work because mind tells me to go to work. I'll be happy. I go to work. Mind tells me that eat nice prasadam, you'll be happy. I eat the nice prasadam, trying to be happy through the prasadam. Or any activity, if you look, Bharata Maharshi says to Rehugana, avidyaya manasa kalpitaste. Only through avidya it has happened, nothing else. And it is the same thing what Krishna repeats to Uddhava at least 10 or 15 times in the Bhagavatam. Only thing, we may not have noticed it. Vidhi maya manomayam, that you will see, isn't it? In the 11th canto, you will see Uddhava, he says to Uddhava in the 28th chapter, you will see Krishna saying to them that, So, kim badra kim abhadram va, dvaidasya vastuna kiyal, vajoditam tananardam, manasodhyadam eva va, he said. All what you are doing here, he said, it's all nonsense, Krishna is saying. Kim badram kim abhadram va, what is right and wrong in all these things? Why? Dvaidasya vastuna kiyal, you are in the duality, world of duality. Vajoditam tat anurdam. What that is the fourth verse in the 28th chapter. Vajoditam tat anurdam. Everything you are talking about is all lie. Why? Because it's come from the mind. Manaso dhyatam evava. From the mind and the dhyanam, meditation from that, you have created all these things. So Krishna won't listen to Uddhava. He's saying to him, I don't want to hear anything from you about these things, he said. So you can see all the great realized souls, Krishna also have to say exactly the same thing, nothing different. Dattatreya Maharshi said the same thing, you will see there. And again, if you look into the same 11th canto in the beginning, when Krishna started the instruction, the 7th chapter, what did he say to him? He says to him that, Tomtu sarvam parityajya, that verse, yeah. 7th verse, next verse he says, Yadidam manasau vacha, chakshurbhyam shravanadibhi, nashvaram grihyamanam cha, vidhi maya manomayam. Vidhi maya manomayam. That yadidam manaso vacha, whatever you have created through your mind and the words, chakshurbhyam shravanadibhi, and your senses, eyes and the ears, nashvaram grihyamanam cha, they have no existence, they are not real, they are illusion. Nashvaram grihyamanam cha vidhi, know this, mayamayam, manomayam. That's mayamayam and that's manomayam. It's from the mind, it's from the maya that it has come. So it has no reality. It is not the truth. It is all lies, Krishna said later on. So similarly, you can see here also that it's on the same principle that this mind is there in us. And the senses are there. They are both imperfect. And as long as these two are operating, there is no question of happiness in this situation. With the mind and the senses operating. And that is why Krishna is saying here that that when the mind goes away completely, everything, all the distress and happiness also, both, it's all experienced in the mind only. It's not in you, it's in the mind. It's in the mind. And when the mind wakes up, all this happiness, distress comes. And when the mind dissolves, all the happiness, distress goes away from us. Therefore, this is called this limitation of the mind. All it does is, it causes some problem and it goes away at the night. So, that is why Krishna says there that as long as this limitation, parichinnatvam, in the Upanishads the word is parichinnatvam. If the parichinnatvam or this limitation is there, you will continuously have distress all through your life. It will never go away. So, who am I? And if I am, and that is what is actually causing this Brahmam also. Which one? I am this body. This bodily identification is also coming from that. It's also coming from this weakness of the mind, this limitation of the mind. But in reality, am I this body? And is this body my real identity? And my experience, I am, awareness, has it got anything to do with this body? This question we have to ask. We have to ask. So, and, okay, in Vyavaharam it is there. But you have to leave the Vyavaharam here, isn't it? Because in Vyavaharam means when transactions in this world, we are actually on the bodily level. Always. When we are conducting Vyavaharam, we are only, always on the bodily platform, isn't it? That is why the more you do Vyavaharam, your Ajnanam will increase. Avidya will increase and it will become powerful. Avidya will become more powerful. That is why we say when you come to spiritual life, minimize the Vyavaharam for this reason. Because it is a very negative effect on the spiritual life. Which one? Vyavaharam. What Vyavaharam does is, it makes it more powerful, that Avidya Ajnanam inside. And that you can see in so many instances. Isn't it? How avidya? Even after saying all these things, we will still like our Vyavaharam. So we'll have a short break.
Chedo darpanam arjanam baumaha davagni nirvavanam shreyakaidava chandriyam vidaranam vidhyavadhu jivanam anandam budivardhanam pradipada purnamrida swadhanam sarvabna sabanam പരം വിജയതേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ സങ്കീർത്തനം നാമനാമകാരി ബഹുദാ നിജ സർവശക്തി തത്രാർപ്പിതാ നിയമിതാ സ്മരണേന കാലാ ഏതാദൃശീ തവ കൃപാ ഭഗവൻ മമാഭി ദുർദൈവമീദൃശമിഹാജനി നാനുരാഗാഃ തൃണാരവിഷുനീ ചേനാം തരോരവി സഹിഷ്ണുന അമാലിനാമാനദേന കീർത്തനീയ സദാ ഹരി ന ധനം ന ജനം ന സുന്ദരീം കവിതാം വാ ജഗദീശ കാമയേ മമ ജന്മനി ജന്മനി ഈശ്വരീ ഭവദാദ് ഭക്തിരഹേ ദുവിത്വൈ ഐ നന്ദതനുജ കിങ്കരം പതിതാമം വിഷമേ ഭവാംബുധോ കൃപയാ തവ പാദഭംഗജ സ്ഥിതധൂളി സദൃശം വിചിന്തയാം നയനം ഗലദശ്രുധാരയാ വദനം ഗദ്ഗദരുദ്ധയാ ഗിര പുലകേർജിതം ദദാവപോ തവ നാമഗ്രഹണേ ഭവിഷ്യതി യുഗായിദം നിമേഷേണ ചക്ഷുഷാ പ്രാവിശായിദം ശൂന്യായിദം ജഗത്സർവം ഗോവിന്ദവിരഹേണ മേ ആശ്ലിഷ്യ വാ പാദരതാം പിനഷ്ടു മാം അദർശനാം മർമഹദാം കരോതു വാ യഥാ തഥാ വാ വിദധാ ദുലംബനോ മത്പ്രാണനാഥാസ്തു നയേവ നാപരാം. സോ വ്യവഹാരം സ്ട്രെങ്തൻസ് ദി മൈൻഡ്. Vyaharam strengthens the mind. You can see this, that even suppose you have to give an application to the to a government department for passport or any such thing for that matter, they ask you for the name, isn't it? What's your name? And if you can't write there, I am Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam, if you write there, they won't give you the passport there. So there they will ask you all sorts of things, where you were born, everything related to the body. Everything related to the body. So what happens? It gets strengthened. That vasana gets strengthened inside. They'll ask you male or female, and then so all these questions, everything is to identify with the body strongly in one way or the other. So even if you want to define yourself in a spiritual way, society won't allow you. Society won't allow you to define yourself on a spiritual platform, isn't it? So suppose this understanding that I am man or woman or and this is my date of birth, again body, date of birth, based on the body. And your religion, if they are to put that on, again based on the body. Nothing is to develop your spiritual side. It's all for your pulling towards the material identity. This thing is called primeval ignorance. Basic ignorance in a person. Basic ignorance means that in Shastram they call it as Mula Avidya. Mula Avidya. Avidya is very deep-rooted, basic itself is like that. So, his own base itself is in Avidya, isn't it? It's in ignorance. So, without Avidya, you can't do Vyavaharam, isn't it? It's like that. Without that Avidya, you can't do Vyavaharam. Vyavaharam means you need this avidya, otherwise you can't do any vyavaharam. So, and as long as this avidya is in a person, knowledge of the self is not possible. That's also there. Knowledge of the self is not possible. You have to remember everything what we spoke till now. As I mentioned before, that if you try to make the whole world to bring it together in spiritual life, it's not going to work. It cannot work. It has never worked in the past. You may do something good to so many people, but it is that one person who has escaped from this, he is the success story. He is the only one who can really help anybody.
He is the only one who can help anybody in this world, the one who has realized the truth. Not the millions you have made the followers. They are all in the same boat. This Mula Vidya is there in everybody. So that is why Sanatana Dharma is totally against this. Which one? Accumulating numbers. Numbers is not important in the Sanatana Dharma philosophy, in the Veda philosophy, Vaidyam. Vedam never accepted the numbers as important. Vedam accepted that one person who has realized the truth. He is the most valuable thing in this. At least he has escaped from this in the avidya. Avidya has escaped from that. So, otherwise the whole base of everybody is in this avidya. And this avidya, as long as it's there, absolute truth can never be realized. It's not possible. Because these two are constantly opposing in the opposite direction. Mula avidya is one direction, self-realization is the another direction. So totally opposite. Therefore, that is why Jadabharata said to Rahugana in the Bhagavatam, Na surayena vyavaharam tattvavamarshena sahamanandi. If you look, you will see that verse. He begins, Brahmana Vacha begins that verse. Akovida kovida vadavadan. That verse. He says, Na surayena vyavaharamena tattvavamarshena sahamanandi. My dear king, he says here, that knowledgeable people who know about spiritual life, they will not mix vyavaharam with spiritual life. Vyavaharam, if you mix with spiritual life, there will be only vyavaharam. There will be no spiritual life. There will be no spiritual life. So, vyavaharam is based on ignorance, ajnanam in other words, and your ajnanam will become more and more powerful. That is the first verse in that 11th or 12th chapter, one of them. Akovida kovida vada vada, isn't it? Yeah, that's one. Akovida kovida vada vada, vadasyaho nadi vadam varishta nasurayohi vyavahara menam tattvava marshena sahamanandi. He made it very clear to Rahugana straight away. There's no point in talking about it as long as there is vyavaharam involved in that. You see? So, this is the very deep level. If you understand this, then it will help us to move away from vyavaharam rather than increasing that vyavaharam. In the vyavaharam level, it pulls us very easily into that understanding that I am this body. On that level, you will operate all the time, and that strengthens that avidya inside, and that is what Krishna is also saying here, that the vyavaharam's nature, that they will not mix these two things together. Jadabharata didn't want to. Of course, this is spoken on a very higher level. So, this ahangaram, everybody has that false ego inside. When I start defining about me as a person, then you will come. Isn't it? If I define about me as a person, then I have to accept somebody else as a person, another person. In this way, samsaram, material existence expands. That's how material existence expands. Look at this way. All the problems people are fighting about in this world, whether it is Ukraine or whether it's somewhere else, where is it coming from? It's coming from this understanding that I'm Russian or you are Ukrainian or I'm some identity somewhere which has come from your harem, is it not? So what Krishna is saying here is that material existence will be there as long as you are pampering each other with the false ego. So when the samsara means material existence means distress, isn't it? That's another word. Distress is spoken in a different way. That's called samsara, material existence. So when spiritual knowledge builds up in a person, I am inquiring this question. The first thing what I will ask is, who I am? Who am I? First thing. What is my identity? That is why it is asking like that. Because in vyavaharam, we have identified with the self so much. And because I am existing in Vyavaharam, you are existing in Vyavaharam, he is existing in Vyavaharam, so many people exist in the Vyavaharam. In order to, when you come to spiritual knowledge, first thing you are inquiring about, who I am? Who am I? That question has to be asked. And that question has to be properly answered inside. Otherwise, you can't go another step further. You can't go another step further. Because every time you will conduct your Vyavaharam and you will always see more and more individuals coming there and expanding your material existence. Samsaram will be expanded in that way. So that is why this question comes that I am not this body, and at the same time, as I mentioned before also, in Melpathur said this to Krishna, that he said in the Narayaniyam, he says that, please relieve me from this pain, arthritis, what he was experiencing at that time. And in every end of every chapter, he kept praying to Krishna that, please help me to get rid of this illness from my body. I cannot engage in spiritual life because of this. But finally he says to Krishna, he me dehamoham. Problem is not the problem with the body. The problem is this identification with the body itself. Tijapavanapuradishayal premahedo dehe vite kalatradishuja vivashidam tulpadam vismarandi. That because I have this body, and this body is making me to identify with that body, what's happening? Tulpadam vismarandi. I cannot remember you, who is situated within my heart as Antaryami. I have no connection with him. Because body has taken all my attention away to the body. You can see, observe yourself, that sometimes you are in the bodily identity. Sometimes you are in the identification with the mind. Isn't it? Sometimes you can see yourself, you are not in the bodily identity, you are in identification with the mind. When you are absorbed in some serious negotiations or conversation, you can see you lost your identity with the body, you are identifying with the mind. And again, suppose you are deeply absorbed in something, thinking about something, you are more absorbed in the intelligence. So this identification of the self changes from body to mind to intelligence, or sometimes to ego. That is why the word Atma is used for everything, because of this reason. That it is always shifting one to another. Body, mind, intelligence, ego, like this is shifting. And because of the shifting nature, you can't, till you realize the self, you have to accept Atma as body, Atma as the mind, Atma as the intelligence, Atma as the ego. For this reason only. That's the reason. You'll see in many places, mind is referred to as Atma, body is referred to as Atma. And people ask the question, why are you saying Atma for the body? Is there some mistake in the book? There's no mistake in the book. Mistake is in us. Shastram is coming from a much deeper level. It is, as far as Shastram is concerned, you are the Atma, the soul, nothing else. Body is something, is the real thing, the body. That question comes in the Puranjanavakyanam. You will see if you read Puranjana's story that you are accepting something which is not real and real, accepting that as a reality and identifying with it. Something that is not even real. Body is not a real thing. But as long as we are in that state, that personality, same thing with the personality, ego, everything, identification. So, hi me dehamoham. Tejapavanapuradishayal premahedo dehe vitte kalatradishuja vivashitam tulpadam vismarandi. Because I have accepted all this as me, which me, home, wife, children, and all that identification with that, tulpadam vismarandi, I have forgotten about you. When I forgotten about you means forgotten about the Atma, the soul. So I am vaneshunova. What is the function of this body? When it finishes, when it drops off, either it will go to the fire, vani, or it will be eaten by the dogs. Paramiha marado sambradacha akshikarnatva jihva graivigarshandi. Either it will go to fire, or it will go to the dogs, or it will be eaten away by somebody. whatever it may be, when it is present in me, what does it do? Tok jihvagre vikarshandi. That tok, the senses of touch, senses of taste, and all senses, they do only one thing. Vigarshandi avasha idimada. They will continuously crush me, asking, demanding this, demanding that, to enjoy. Avasha idimada kopinatval padabje. They will continuously pull me and crush me, but no senses, no mind, or no intelligence is telling me to remember you, Atma or Krishna. Kobinatval padabje. Nobody is taking you back to you. Nobody is driving their attention. So there itself you can see the devotees have only one thing to say. These senses and mind are of no use to us. It's only there to cause problems. As much as problem as possible, it will create. And one day when the body goes, that also goes. But the mind doesn't finish its business still. It will go to the next life, carrying to the next body and continuously from there. So, all this identification with the body, with the mind, with the intelligence, with the ego, it's called a Mula Vidya. It's called Mula Vidya. Or personality identification in that way. So, primal ignorance. So therefore it says here, one Brahmachari, he wanted to study Vedantam. He wanted to study Vedantam. The Swamiji asked him, this happened in Hrishikesh with Shivananda, Swami Shivananda. When Brahmachari came up to him, he said to him that, I want to study Vedantam. I want to know, experience Vedantam, he said. So Shivananda asked him that, what's your qualification? He says, I've got MA, postgraduate qualifications, he said. So Shivananda Saraswati says to him, Master of Avidya. That was his answer. Master of Avidya. More Avidya inside, more difficult, isn't it? So generally it is Master of Arts, is it not? So it's Master of Avidya, he said. So to know that, when we know that all this knowledge what we are getting from everywhere, collecting it, information, and all that what we acquired in the university, colleges and everything, when we know that it's all avidya, then only then you are qualified for Brahma Vidya. It's not easy, eh? That is why you can see these people who have gone and spent the years and years in the university, and they have become convinced that they have got the answer for everything. And when you have to discuss with them about spiritual life, the answer mostly, it's not going in. Somehow or the other, it's not going. It's much easier to get an ignorant farmer, so-called ignorant farmer from a village, and if you speak to him, he will catch up. But the so-called professor from the university, or Cambridge, or Oxford, whatever it is, and you have to tell them all these things about spiritual life, all these things, very, very basic things, what a farmer will know, he will not know it. He will not. He requires explanation, logic, and reasoning, everything. Why? Because the Mula Vidya in that person is much more on a deeper level. Deeper level. So when we know that all that I have got in my head is all this Mula Vidya in me, and only then I am ready for Brahma Vidya. This is Brahma Vidya's entry qualifications. Qualifications for coming to Brahma Vidya. You will see this when you read some of the Upanishads commentaries and Bhashyams. You will notice this. How our own avidya is coming against the realizations of the rishis. So, this is Krishna mentions Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Iti Bhagavad Gita Upanishadsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre. So, Yoga Shastram is Brahma Vidya. And Yoga Shastram is what is that? Is the preparation for Brahma Vidya. For Brahma Vidya. Preparatory knowledge is. And because Brahma Vidya, as far as Krishna is concerned, it should realize, we have to have it like this, it should happen to us. That fast it should happen. Brahma Vidya. Because of the avidya inside, it's not happening. It's not happening. So, who I am, what is my identity, and am I ready to know about myself, isn't it? And and in order to know that, that is why dhyanam, meditation. And what is that meditation? Meditation is this. It's a small question. I am asking myself, and I am asking about my own personality. What is this personality I am talking about in this world, running around, trying to do so many things, identifying it? And it, principally what you are doing is you are giving attention to this vibration inside me, who I am, isn't it? And and when I am relating with somebody in some form, what does this personality do at that time in me? What does the personality do at that time? Everything, whenever I am speaking, it is centered around something. It's centered around something. So, I am operating with someone, when I am conversing with someone, when I am engaged in activity with someone, the personality in me, or vyaktitvam as it is called, individuality, that will be the center on which, based on which all the actions are operated, operations happening. So, so even while chanting the holy name, you can observe yourself, I am chanting, isn't it? I am there. I am in everything. Even while chanting, it's there. In the sadhana state, it's all there. Even while doing deity worship, I am there. Even while you are doing any spiritual activity, I am there. I don't go away. Because any time, any sadhana when you are doing, and if he is imposed, superimposed on you as the person that you are doing it, that means you are bound. So sadhana is also not easy. People think sadhana is very easy, 16 rounds, and we make it very simple, isn't it? But proper sadhana, that is why even after chanting, Ajamila chanted once Narayana, is it not? And then Vishnudas came. We have chanted so many years, Vishnudas didn't come. Maybe they may come. I think only Yamadudas are going to come. When we have chanted all these years, why is like that? Because our chanting also is still in that level. It hasn't gone any more than that. It's still I am chanting, I am doing, I am this, I am that. And I, that false ego inside, is very, very, very strong inside. That is the reason why they say that Ajamila, Ajamilo Nama Mahisura, that Brahmana, when he was first visited by the Vishnudas, and then Ajamila went to Haridwar, and in Haridwar he chanted Narayana for many times, and then by now his chanting has improved. When he chanted first time Narayana addressing his son, and when he got the association of the Vishnudas, and then he went to Haridwar, by now his ego part of it has gone away totally from him. That is why he didn't have to chant very much in Haridwar. Very easily he was taken away from Haridwar to the spiritual world. You can read in the Bhagavatam. If you study that Jamila story properly and understand that, then you will know how difficult is chanting. Up to that time you will say, now for propaganda purpose we will tell people, chanting, you know, it's the most simplest process, just take to it. All you have to do is to chant. And it is such a simple process. It is a simple, it is, physically it is. But inside it is not that simple. As long as this ego is operating inside, our chanting is never pure. It's never going to be perfect so easily. And ego is not going to go easily from inside. So, that is why Krishna is saying here also, that once that attention goes away, that any activity, because most of the time we are in vyavaharam, some vyavaharam or the other, and all that vyavaharam has strengthened our ego so strongly, therefore it will creep into our chanting also. The same ego will creep into that, isn't it? So, and once it has happened like that, we will be in bondage. That means you are chanting in the bondage. Normally what do we do? when we are engaged in material activities, or when we are breathing, while walking, while engaged in vyavaharam, these things we don't impose on the body, superimpose on the body. So, because, for example, if you are breathing, you don't have to identify with it. It will happen in a natural way within you, isn't it? Blood is flowing, blood pressure, everything is set up properly like that. And digestive system in the way. You don't have to give any attention to it. It will work on its own, is it not? I don't keep an eye on the food when I take, what's all happening to the food after it goes in, isn't it? Similarly, respiratory system, breathing, it happens in a natural way. In all these things, I don't impose that I am the doer. Superimposition doesn't happen. And a little bit of our activities with the body also happens in that way. I don't think I am doing it. For example, going to bathroom in the morning, brushing the teeth. After a while, it happens in natural way. Don't think too much about it, isn't it? That you take the brush, you put the paste on, and you go and start doing it. And you don't think about it. In an automatic way, it happens. But if you are doing a big thing in life, some important thing there, or if you are doing something bad, something not proper, then you will also shed away some of your shame also. I'm doing the wrong thing. I shouldn't be doing that, isn't it? But you feel like that when you're doing something wrong. Suppose you have acted something wrong way, that time you'll feel, oh, I'm doing a wrong thing. It's not right, nice thing to do, but I'm doing it. There's a little bit of feeling of that shame coming in. But suppose you are doing deity worship, you will think, I'm doing it. Very strongly it will come, I'm doing the deity worship, isn't it? And if you try to chant the holy name, see there what happens at that time also. Am I doing chanting properly? I have to chant in such a way that everybody recognizes my chanting is proper. And I also make sure that while I'm chanting, do I look very blissful? Or do I look, there is a effulgence around my face? Things like that, all imagination will come from that, from this chanting. Because while chanting, I am chanting. That feeling is very strong inside. Because continuously, I am superimposing everything on the ego. On the ego. And this ego, superimposing on the ego, is troublesome. Is troublesome. Because that is why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the secret of all the spiritual sadhana, Krishna mentions there, all secret of all the sadhana is first offering everything to Krishna. That is the secret of that. That means Krishna is doing through it. Jara marana mokshaya mama ashrite yatandiye te brahma tadvidu krishnam adhyalmam karma chakhilam. Then you have come to the spiritual platform. That means if you accept that, chanting is happening through this body, andaryami inside is chanting. With that understanding, if the chanting goes on, Jaramarana Mokshaya, that one is important verse in the 7th chapter, I think. Jaramarana Mokshaya, if you want to free yourself from the miseries of birth and death and old age and disease, Mama Ashrite Yadandiye, first thing you do is take Krishna shelter. Not through the words, but accepting that even this chanting will not happen if Krishna doesn't want to do it. Only if Krishna wants to do it, it will happen. Otherwise, for us ordinary people like us, normally what do we do? I have to chant 16 rounds somehow in the morning. I have to get up at 4 o'clock. I have to get up at 4 o'clock. There itself I started. Even before getting up, I has woken up. And then I have to bathe. I have to go for Mangalarti. I have to chant my 16 rounds. I have to attend the Guru Puja. In everything, this I will be there. Janamarana Mokshaya Mama Ashrite Yadandiye. Krishna says, first shelter me. Absorb me first inside, recognizing that Krishna is behind everything. Jaramarana Mokshaya Mama Ashrite Yadandiye Te Brahmam Tad Vidu Krishnam. If you do it like that will become complete, perfect. Adhyalmam Karma Chakhilam.
that is adhyatmam, that is spiritual. Otherwise, it's not spiritual. That is why this sadhana bhakti, some people, they have chanted whole life. And at the end, they are saying that we have chanted 40 years, 50 years. What has happened? Nothing has happened. Everything is the same as the train started. And the same way, the train is standing in the same place. Nothing has changed. The same ragam, same dvesham, same kartratvam, same bhoktratvam. Nothing has changed. Why is that? Because we are not understood what Krishna is telling us. We are not taken that seriously, what Krishna has told us there. So, in other words, any spiritual activity, if the results we are expecting all the time from inside, I should get this result, that result, that result, and we are continuously engaging in spiritual activity, the result will be nothing. There will be no result at all. And that is why they are saying that never to look at the result in spiritual life. You have to just do it without looking at the result. And never to look at it. And that is difficult. That's difficult also, isn't it? We are looking at every day how much progress I have made in spiritual life, isn't it? So every time when we start looking at it, what will happen is it will become a very strong bondage with the I, with the false I. And instead of sadhana become a helpful thing for liberation, it will become a thing for bondage. The very sadhana, instead of becoming strengthening our freedom from the body, it will make our strong identity with the body. Because in all through the sadhana, my false ego has taken the ownership. My false ego has taken the ownership. It's a very subtle thing. All these things are very subtle in the spiritual life. Therefore, when we engage in chanting the holy name or doing the deity worship, sometimes it may become a problem in itself. And even those who have got good anishthanam, who are very much fixed in all these things, they should not do this because it will take away their spiritual realization. Spiritual realization. And this is because, and when your ego gets strengthened, what happens? Then you want recognition in the world. When the ego gets strengthened, you want recognition in the world. Profit, adoration, distinction, as they say. You want to be recognized as a devotee. You want to be recognized by the public in so many different ways. And that is why sometimes in spiritual personalities who have gone through this way, they sometimes want to get more famous and more recognized in this world. Although they will tell the world, we are doing all these things because of our feeling or compassion for the Buddha Daya, they call it. It's not Buddha Daya. What it is this ahankaram inside has become so strong that it comes out in this way, that it has to be recognized by the others. It's all too subtle to notice these things. People don't notice these things. Lot of people, this is a big problem, that this ahankaram inside, because they have strengthened it themselves. A simple person in a simple surrounding, he is not looking for any recognition. He is satisfied as long as he gets his meals and he has a place to sleep and the simple things, and he disappears from this world without causing too much of a noise. Whereas a spiritual personality, before he leaves this world, so-called spiritual personality, because he had always been desiring for recognition and his sadhana was based on this, I am doing, he was not able to free himself from that. Therefore, what happens? That gets so strengthened that he wants recognition from the world. He wants his samadhi designed before he leaves this world. He wants his biography written by as many disciples as possible. All these falsities comes out in a very polished way into the society, and people get cheated by that. This is the way it works. You got to know, because when Krishna says these things, he's not just talking to us to mislead us. He's telling us that if you come to spiritual life, if you don't look inwards and see what the situation there it is, instead thinking all the time the world, 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 and the world will recognize me, world will honor me, world is everything, world is nothing as far as spiritual realization is concerned. But unfortunately, this has become the norm of the day. This is how modern world is. That is why it's become so difficult now to present the truth to people that spiritual life is not based on all this all these extra activities. It is very much the matter related to the self, and that becomes introspection. Bhagavatam is talking like that. Bhagavad Gita is saying like that. All centered around the truth inside. Otherwise, that is why Krishna says here that if we do like that, all our anushtanam, the anushtanam means all our sadhana, even you can't impose it on yourself that you are the doer, and then you will lose it. That even has to be offered to Krishna, as Krishna is doing that. And nothing, we should keep it in our hand. Everything you have to hand over to Krishna, all stages at all times. And if you do like that all the time, then you will get released. Kayena vacha manasendriyerva buddhyalpanava prakritin svabhaval karomi yadyat sakalam parasmai narayanayedi samarpayami. We will get released. Otherwise, we won't get released. None of our activities, you can't hold on to that. You can't hold anything. And that is what this verse is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, isn't it? Kayena vacha manasendriyerva. You don't have to study Bhagavatam for this, because if you know this one verse properly, then you have understood Bhagavatam. Bhagavata dharmam, the whole Bhagavata dharmam is that verse. If you have understood this verse properly, then you have understood Bhagavatam. All the activities with the body, what you speak with your words, the thoughts in your mind, with the intelligence, whatever discrimination you have, and your ego. Behind all these things, there is a deposit. Behind all these things, there is a deposit. And it is keeping that deposit behind it, we are doing our business in this world. You know what I'm saying? That behind our body, behind our mind, behind our intelligence, our words and intelligence, and behind our ego, pride, whatever that is, behind that there is a deposit. And keeping that deposit only, all our transactions are going on. Abhimanam, pride, isn't it? All our business is centered around that abhimanam, pride inside us, isn't it? And that deposit is, in that verse, what they call prakrite svabhavat. Remember? Kayena vacha manasendriyerva buddhyatmanava prakrite svabhavat. That deposit in the inside us. The deposit inside. And that is what is called prakriti. That is what's called prakriti. And so, what does it say? Narayanayedi samarpayami. Samarpayami. In other words, don't hold on to that. Give it to Krishna. Give it to Krishna. How will you offer that? That is the question, isn't it? The first part is clear. That you can't hold on anything, any ownership in anything, what the body does, mind does, intelligence does, ego does. Everything has to be handed over to Krishna. That's the first part of it. What's the first part of it? So, after that the question comes. So, the question you have to ask at that time, who is doing this? When karma is happening through the body, when karma is happening through the mind, karma is happening through intelligence or false ego even, actual force behind that is Krishna. It is Krishna who is behind it. We take the credit for that. That's another thing. As I have done it, I did this, I did that. Nothing we have done, nobody is doing anything. Krishna is doing everything through everybody. That is why it is said in the 13th chapter, Sarvada Pani Vadam Dal Sarvadokshashiro Mukham Sarvada Shudimal Loge Sarvam Avritya Tishtadi. Upanishad verse it is. Sarvada Pani Padam Dal. Everywhere Krishna's hands and Krishna's legs, not our hands and our legs. All this realization is necessary. Otherwise this Kayena Vacha is never going to happen. We will say, oh, I have done this, I built this, I did that, I organized this. I will continue. It will take you to the next life to do further I after that. It will never come out of it. How will you come out? It has to come out now, here itself. That is what Krishna is saying. So before we talk about this Kayena Vacha, this process we have to know. First thing is, Krishna is doing everything. Everything has to be, credit has to be given to Krishna. We can't take any credit, good or bad, whatever it is. So that habit has to come. That is what that verse is saying. Kaina vaja manasendriyarva udhyalpanava prakrite swabhavat. Because my prakriti is dictating to me, do like this, but who is doing it? Karodi yadyat sagalam parasmai narayanayedi samarpayami. So that samarpanam, that is what Krishna is saying here. Kayena aham karomi, vacha aham vadami, manasa aham chintayet, buddhya aham adhyavasayam karomi, abhimani abhimanosmi. So everything at the moment it is like that. Aham 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 is doing everything. Abhimanam karomi. Prakriti svabhavat. So this prakriti which is operating within us due to our vasanas and due to our abhimanam or pride, what it is was through, because of that, when the action comes from Krishna, Krishna is acting through our body, because of this vasanas, that is, because of the abhimanam inside, that pride inside, I start thinking, oh, my senses are doing this, my mind is doing this, and whatever that is happening through the senses and is happening through the mind, who is doing this? I am doing this. It's my prakriti is doing that. Prakriti means, basically in that word, prakriti means karana shariram, causal body inside. Remember, we have got a gross body, then we have got a subtle body, and we have got a causal body, isn't it? So, if you look into the activities of the gross body, sthulam, sthula shariram, the activities of the gross body, it's not a philosophy, you have to remember this. These are not philosophy, these are the facts of life. Then if you give some attention to that and if you do some reflection on that, you will see, you will understand in your daily life this Vedantic understanding, Vedantic thought, kayena vaja. This can come practically in your own experiences. In your own experiences. Only thing is, you have to be a little bit more aware of this. No, after knowing this from the Bhagavadam, and then if you go back to your own life and you start looking at it, you will see there that leave behind the Bhagavad Gita, we can first analyze this this way, that all the activities of the mind, all the thoughts, that body does the activities. The mind is thoughts, thought waves, isn't it? Thoughts are it. And similarly, causal body, what is its activity? Sleep, deep sleep, isn't it? Causal body is deep sleep. Sushmam, subtle body, is thought waves. Gross body is physical activity. All three of them, when he has got unconscious by some reason, all these three of them we are imposing on the self. Which one? The activities of the gross body, the thought waves of the subtle body, the sleeping situation of the causal body, all three of them we are passing on to the self. You are passing on to the self, is it not? When you say, kayena vacha manasendriyarva buddhyalpanava prakrite svabhaval karomi yadyat sakalam parasmai narayanayedi samarpayami. What's happening there? The activities of the gross body, the thought waves of the mind, and the sleep of the causal body, all three of them, and you are passing that on to the Atma as the self, isn't it? Then when it is done like that, it will become a cause of liberation. That's what Bhagavatam is saying. Instead of identifying with the ego, with all these three things, if you pass it on to the self, it will become a cause of liberation.
And if you identify with them, with the gross body or the subtle body or the causal body, it will become a cause of bondage. It will become a kind of cause of bondage. That is the most difficult thing. That passing this on to the self, which we'll discuss it tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Jai Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. Jai Mahaprabhu Ki Jai.